is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Well, hello there. Welcome to 1 week before the draft. Can you believe it? We're only a week away. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. John Murphy here in our One Buffalo studio. Chris Brown helping out, co-hosting again today. Steve Tasker back tomorrow, and then next Monday, we start with Steve on a regular basis for the brand new show, One Bills Live, next Monday, 12 noon to 3 p.m. For now, John Murphy Show, week before the draft. Schedule comes out tonight. You get the feeling, Chris, that we're kind of, everything feels like we're on the verge of something big here. Nothing big yet here today, but everything kind of feels like, okay, just wait a while. Stuff's going to happen here pretty soon.
How soon are you talking?
I'm talking about tonight with the schedule.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's. I get excited about the schedule.
I've got draft myopia at this point.
I've got a little
bit of
that.
The schedule, I'm interested, but the draft is still carrying the bulk of my attention at this point because we are a week away. We are a week away, Murph.
A week away from the draft. Is it the most highly anticipated draft of all time? It might be. We've been posing that question to a couple of folks, and we'll continue to do that. Happy to have you with us here on the show today. You can join us on the show. The phone line's open, 803-0550, the number to call within the Buffalo calling area. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. On the show today, it is the final day this week of the Bills' off-season conditioning program for this week. Phase one this week. Phase one resumes next week. And on the show today, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we expect to get Bills receiver Kelvin Benjamin live with us. Chris is going to go out by the locker room area and talk to Kelvin Benjamin. And a lot to talk with him about, Chris. I will say one thing, and you know, I'm reluctant to take to get too much out of the watching a little bit of the offseason workouts. Kelvin Benjamin looks much leaner to me now than he did at the end of last year, and I think that's what everyone anticipated would happen.
Yeah, and I think what really hamstrung him last year was the injury. I mean, he plays one game, and then the second game he gets that knee injury, has to have surgery at the end of the season. He basically gutted it out for the end of the year, the last four or five games that he played. I mean, he was essentially playing on one leg and really was just a post-up receiver for the better part of the rest of the season, and still produced. I mean, he had that touchdown in the overtime win over Indianapolis. You know, the Bills don't win that game without that touchdown. And, you know, I think all things considered, knowing what his condition was, you know, I think he helped enough down the stretch where you're thinking to yourself, well, a fully healthy Kelvin Benjamin come 2018, I'm pretty encouraged about what he's going to be able to contribute to the passing game. And now, you know, you have a veteran in Jeremy Curley on this roster who's probably going to slide into that slot role. So you've got somebody that at least a defense has to respect inside. You figure that should help him outside. And then maybe that means Zay Jones moves exclusively to an outside role where last year they gave him all of the wide receiver roles to learn. And I think his head was swimming a little bit. So hopefully a healthy Benjamin, Curley in the fold, Zay Jones maybe just focusing on one specific role in the offense primarily. There's some more traction to the passing game. Of course, quarterback is the bigger question in terms of how that's going to unfold and what could very well be a three-man quarterback competition come the end of next week.
Question for you, Chris, about Kelvin Benjamin. Chris is going to be talking with him, we believe, in about 25 minutes or so. And it's been discussed on this show. We never quite got to an answer at this. Is Kelvin Benjamin a number one receiver? Is he the Bills' number one receiver?
I think he has to be by default.
Yeah. But does he have the capability to be a number one, would you think?
I think there's enough of a resume there. Yes, he's, you know, missed a lot of time to injury where you can't really determine, is this guy going to be able to consistently put up the kind of numbers he did in that, I want to say, 2015 season, his rookie year. He put up over 1,000 yards. I think he had 7-8 touchdowns. If you can do that in this offense, well, then, yeah, you are the number one target, I think, with how this offense historically has been run the last couple of years. How much that changes under Brian Daboll remains to be seen. And, again, we're talking about the quarterback element again, too. You know, are they a team that's going to maybe shift their philosophy to more of a balanced mix between run and pass? Are they going to be 60-40 pass, you know, like Andy Reid's offensive teams are historically. I think that's all.
Do you see that?
I don't think it'll go that far, but I think there'll be a greater mix provided they feel they have the right guy playing quarterback this year. If they feel they have a greater faith that that guy can execute plays on a consistent basis, you know, you're probably not running on third and three like the Bills did an awful lot last year. You're throwing.
Yeah.
And so that means more opportunities for your receiving core. That means more catches for Kelvin Benjamin, hopefully more touchdowns, and more yardage.
Chris will be talking with Kelvin Benjamin at the bottom of this hour. That's the plan anyway. We're going to talk a lot about the draft. We're going to talk a lot about the schedule. We're going to talk a lot about positioning in the draft in today's show. And coming up at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk with one of the foremost experts on the draft and really the world of analytics from Pro Football Focus, Steve Palazzolo, who's done extensive research into the draft and extensive research into the prospects in the draft. He's got a nice big piece that he wrote. He's coming up with us at 2 o'clock today about some of the narratives, and he dispels many of the narratives in the draft. You know, Lamar Jackson is a runner, not a passer. No, according to Steve Palazzolo. There's things like that in there.
Was an emphatic no there.
No, I mean, I like the way he did this. I love the way he did this. Jackson just runs around and scrambles. False. According to Steve Palazzolo.
Maybe we should keep him for true false.
Saquon Barkley is a generational running back. False, says Steve Palazzolo.
Wow.
We'll debate and we'll discuss with him coming up
hot takes.
At 2 o'clock. He is a fountain of hot takes, and he'll be joining us today at 2 o'clock. In the meantime, let's talk about a couple of things. And again, you're welcome to join us on the telephone line. I'm excited. You apparently don't care that much. I'm excited about the release of the schedule. I love when the schedule comes out. It provides me personally with a kind of a roadmap of what the rest of the year looks like. But beyond that, I think it provides a roadmap for individual teams. Like, what is your schedule? What's it going to look like? What's going to be the crucible point of the season? When does it look like you might be able to stack together some wins? Where is the bye week? Where is the Thursday night game? And what comes before and after it? I just think the schedule answers a lot of questions for teams, not just the Bills, but all teams, about what to look for, how to plan for the upcoming season. And I look forward to that. That's coming out at 8 o'clock tonight. You can get it at our website, buffalobills.com. It'll also be on NFL Network. But I can't wait for the schedule to come out. I get excited on schedule release day.
I look at the schedule and I say, what games am I going to have much shorter deadlines?
Yeah.
What night games do we have?
I know.
I'm going to think a little selfishly there. But no, I mean, there's some intrigue there. I don't think there's any question about it. I think some of the luster comes off because we know what the opponents are. You know,
right.
You know by the end of the season previous what the opponents are lining up to be for the following season. So you kind of know who's in the bag. Now it's just a matter of who you're pulling out first, second, third, fourth, fifth, et cetera. The bye week is always interesting. The Bills have been fortunate in recent years. It's been somewhere between week 6 and 10, probably the last 4 or 5 years running. Last year was week 6, and I think that's a good spot. Anywhere between week 6 and 10, if your bye can fall in there, you know, that's an advantageous place, in my opinion, because, you know, there's a little bit of wear and tear on you, and getting that week right in that hole near midseason is a good place to get it, you know, and so the backstretch doesn't appear or feel on your body as daunting.
Just for example, I said to my wife this morning, hey, the schedule comes out tonight. And she said, oh, so you'll find out when you're going out west. And I said, we're not going out west.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. The away games include a game at Houston, probably the longest trip the Bills will face this year, along with a trip to Miami. The away games include a trip to Indy, to Green Bay, to Minnesota, and to Baltimore. The home games this year, the three AFC East, plus Jacksonville's coming here, Tennessee, Chicago, Detroit, and the Chargers.
Yeah, one time zone change.
Yeah.
I mean, moving one time zone is as far as the Bills will go this year.
Yeah, it's just I look forward to the schedule. I think most people do. If you have thoughts on that, what you'd like to see, we did this yesterday. We will revisit today. If you like, give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. What would you like to see in the schedule? Who would you like to see the Bills go up against in primetime? Do you want a home primetime game? Would you prefer it to be on the road? Who do you want to open with? When do you want to play the Patriots? When do you want your bye week? All of these questions will be answered tonight at 8. Today's your last chance here on our show to get your wish list in. Not that it's going to matter. Schedule you would think is done right now, right? They probably finished it up a day or two ago. Maybe a couple of little tweaks going on in New York, but not many at this point, I wouldn't think.
TV decisions. That's pretty much it.
That's what it's all about. So the schedule, coming out at 8, we can talk about that. The draft, 1 week away, 8 p.m. next Thursday night. We'll have a nighttime radio show that night, 8 p.m. here. It'll be myself and Steve Tasker a week from tonight to take you through the draft. Should be an interesting night with everything going on. And, Chris, you have done extensive research. You know, we talk a lot. It's been ever since actually, I think once the Bills made the deal with Cordy Glenn and moved up in the draft in the first round, all of us came to the conclusion that, yes, the Bills have a lot of draft capital. We saw it coming. Actually, when they made the Tyrod deal with Cleveland and picked up the extra draft pick there, all of a sudden it was six picks in the first three rounds. Yes, the Bills have a lot of draft capital to spend. We get that. We understand that. But they're not the only ones.
No. No, there's a handful of other teams, conveniently, all around the Bills that have some draft capital to play with. I don't know if it's got the same starch that the Bills have, you know, having two in each of the first three rounds. But, you know, you've got a team, for example, Green Bay has 12 picks in this draft, and they pick 14th. Now, their capital's towards the back end of the draft. You know, they've got two fours and three fifth-round picks. Those don't carry a lot of weight, at least as far as the somewhat outdated draft value chart is concerned. But teams like Arizona, could be interested in a quarterback, they have two third-round picks and eight picks total. You've got Baltimore. They have eight picks. They might be looking for a quarterback with the way Joe Flacco's back is seemingly faltering with each passing year, and his performance is going downhill as well. Miami, who sits right in front of them, they have eight picks, and they've got two in the fourth round. So teams have, in terms of pick total, some comparable numbers, but in terms of strength in the quantity that they have, I don't think it matches the Bills. I think the only team, ironically, that comes close is probably New England down there at 23, and you say, well, what can they do? Well, they're one of the only other teams that have two ones and two twos, and that's enough to get you up in the higher reaches of round one if you want to go up there. And, you know, we've heard in recent days about Josh Rosen, the perception is that he could be sliding down the board, may not go in the top five. If he slips out of the top five, who's going to strike? Well, there are already reports out there that New England covets Josh Rosen, you know, and with Tom Brady, these reports out of New England that he's on the fence, I don't know that I believe it about his future playing career. But even if he, you know, if he does what the expected is and comes back in 2018, is that his last year? I mean, you don't know that. So they traded away Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick, and now the task for them becomes finding the successor to Tom Brady. And I got to tell you, the early reports on the 2019 draft class at quarterback are not good.
Yeah,
they're bad, quite frankly. That could all change. You know, somebody could rise up next fall in the college ranks, and there could be a couple of viable candidates, but you're not going to get the quality and the quantity that I think exists in this year's draft by at all. So I think there is an impetus there on the part of a lot of these teams for that reason and for another, which we can get into later in the show, knowing that the current CBA is getting closer and closer to its expiration date after 2020. And right now, Philadelphia has set the model, Murph. They've set the model for success in the NFL. Trade up, get a quarterback early. Hopefully he's your franchise guy. And if he is, now you got cheap labor at the most important position for the better part of five seasons. Now you can spend money elsewhere on your roster, get a high-priced free agent, Alshon Jeffrey, for example, and load up everywhere else around that young player, and you can go and win championships for a couple of years. Obviously, when he's up for a new contract, it gets a little dicier, but that seems to be a popular model right now, and I think there are other teams in the league that are going to be anxious to take part in that same kind of model and take advantage of that. And in a draft where up to six quarterbacks can come off the board in round one, I think there's going to be teams motivated to make a bold move.
I agree, and that gets us to our Twitter poll, and we want to get you involved in this as well. How do you think this is going to play out next week in terms of the need for quarterbacks, the desire for quarterbacks for the reasons, some of the reasons Chris Brown just mentioned, and, you know, the draft capital that people have to spend. So our Twitter poll, which team do you think might beat the Bills to the punch? Which team could most affect the Bills' first-round draft plans? What do you think? Give us a call. We'd love to hear your voice on the air. 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Which other NFL team could most affect the Bills' first-round draft plans? Beat them to the punch. Maybe jump over them in the first round of the draft. Maybe get to where Buffalo wanted to get. We offer a couple of suggestions on the Twitter poll. Right now, more than half of you, 54%, think it could be the Dolphins. 30% of you think it could be the Patriots. 14% of you say the Arizona Cardinals, and 2% say the Ravens. Which of those teams or maybe somebody else do you think could most affect Buffalo's first-round draft plans? Give us a call. I'd like to hear what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I would go Dolphins, Chris, and here's why. Eight picks. The Bills have, of course, nine. They have two fourth-rounders. They don't have a ton of premium picks, but they do have the pick right in front of Buffalo.
Right.
So you would think it would be easier for Miami to disrupt Buffalo's plans if they stay there 11 and 12, or even if the Dolphins have a little bit more to move up with. And, of course, what is not reflected in what you were talking about, the draft capital chart, is next year's picks. Maybe teams want to get involved right. in using next year's picks. Yeah. But I would say the Dolphins are the team that have the potential to most, I guess, negatively impact the Buffalo Bills' plans to go up and get a quarterback.
Yeah, and, you know, let's put future draft picks in 2019 aside here. Let's just use the draft capital that these teams have at their disposal right now. So the Dolphins have eight picks, and as you mentioned, two in the fourth round. They can get all the way up to number five just by giving up their first at 11 and their second round pick at 42. There's enough draft capital there to get up to five where Denver sits if they want to slide back. They can get all the way up to four if they throw in their third round pick at 73 along with that. So the Dolphins certainly have the wherewithal and the ammo to get up in that territory where the Bills may want to get. And so now it becomes, who's making that jump first? Do they want to see how the board unfolds before they make that move? Or are they so confident that they believe there'll be somebody they're completely happy with at pick five with Denver, or maybe they can convince Cleveland to move out at four?
Dolphins GM Chris Greer was asked point blank, do you think the Dolphins have the firepower to move up from 11th overall in the pick in the draft? And he said, quote, I think there is. I think you can always make a deal to move up. It depends on how much you want to give up. And he mentioned how they did this in the past and probably regret doing it, not Chris Greer, but the rest of the group a couple of years ago when they went to Deion Jordan, moved up to get Deion Jordan. But Chris Greer said, at the end of the day, I think you can move up and down fairly easily, but you also still need someone to want that player or to move out of that spot. That's obvious. So I would keep an eye on the Dolphins. And I do think quarterback would be their motivation. Now, Ryan Tannehill, Greer also said Ryan Tannehill's our quarterback. Okay, this year Ryan Tannehill's your quarterback. But it would not surprise me at all if the Dolphins are ready to check out a new quarterback and maybe a year or two down the road have that quarterback ready to play. I think that'd be a smart move for the Miami Dolphins. So my vote would be the Dolphins would be the team that might be able to beat the Bills to the punch in drafting a first-round quarterback. You believe it's the Patriots?
I worry about the Patriots just because of the ammo they have at their disposal now.
They got it.
You know, with the 2-1s and the 2-2s, I'm a little reluctant to say, yeah, they would make that bold of a move. You know, they can get up to 9 just by giving up both their 1s. Or they could give up their first-round pick at 23 and both of their second-rounders to get up to 9 also. So there are options for them to make use of. Here's the thing. The only reason that I'm not totally convinced that they would make a move like that is because they've got some holes to fill. They got to find a left tackle in this draft after losing Nate Solder in free agency to the Giants. They've got to find linebacker help in the worst way. And they need team speed. They are lacking team speed, especially on defense. And, you know, they need fast players. You can get a corner later in this draft that's going to be quality and still have the speed that you need on the back end, but they need linebacker help terribly. And so are you willing to part with a couple of high picks, you know, in the top 60 selections, 64 selections, to go get that quarterback in the future? Maybe they are. Maybe they feel they can patch the holes on defense and, you know, Belichick can, you know, use his mastery to somehow figure it out and be effective enough on defense and just say, look, I got to take care of the quarterback situation at best. I've got one more year with Brady. We've got to get this position filled, groom a guy for 2019 or 2020. Let's part with the assets now and do that. The other thing, too, is I think we've already seen the Patriots are not a team that will hesitate for a second to move a quality player off their roster. So if they don't want to part with this draft capital to fill the holes that I just mentioned, I wouldn't put it past them to trade a name player to somebody. They already traded Brandon Cooks to the Rams.
They're running out of name players.
I mean,
players.
They did that in a second.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if they feel they have the right asset that they can move off their roster, I mean, they've got running backs that they can part with if they want to do that, although value on them historically in trade situations is not all that high. So I worry because there are options there. They have options at their disposal where if the right situation presents itself, I fear that they could strike.
There are a lot of things that make the Patriots situation intriguing. One of them, I think, goes back to last October, the deal to trade away Jimmy Garoppolo. However it came down, whether it was mandated by Bob Kraft or you know, fought by Bill Belichick, that would have been the best option. They would have been in great position, regardless of what Brady's mindset is or where his contract is, if they still had Garoppolo. They do not. And I think that throws a different kind of cast on this, you know. Are they looking for the next Jimmy Garoppolo? Maybe LaLetta out of Richmond? I don't know.
Right.
Or are they really looking for the next new guy, the number one guy? The second thing about the Patriots situation, it is Brady's contract. Now, as we all know, Brady, as of yet, is not yet reported to the Patriots offseason workouts. Okay, he's missed those before. But NFL Network, NFL.com, they're talking about Brady might be in the middle of a bit of a contract issue here. $14 million in salary in 2018 and 2019 for Brady. He makes $4 million per year less than Blake Bortles of the Jaguars. Brady makes less than every starting quarterback except for A.J. McCarron and the rookies who are coming in. I mean, that's kind of an – even for Tom Brady, selfless, team guy, I'll do whatever it takes to win Tom Brady. That's got to stand out at you. How am I the second lowest paid quarterback in the NFL?
Right. And at the same time, it was also the same reason why they couldn't keep Garoppolo, because Garoppolo was going to command bigger money if he ever hit the market, and he knew that. So there was no way that the Patriots were going to keep him on some kind of short-term deal and say, well, when you do become the starter, we'll take care of you and pay you big money. No, I want the big money now, and I want to start somewhere now because I've waited this long. So, okay, where the Patriots really made a blunder was giving him up for a song. I mean, for San Francisco to get Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick, I mean, that's highway robbery in this era of NFL football. It's a quarterback-driven league, and to get a franchise-caliber quarterback for a second-round pick, I mean, that's a steal. That is an outright steal. So once Kraft made it known, and these are the reports that we hear, and once he made it known, we're sticking with Brady until he's done. Well, now you've got to go to task and find the best value you can to move Garoppolo off your roster. And to get only a two out of that was criminal.
Yeah.
Absolutely criminal.
Well, the clock was ticking, you know, the deadline was approaching.
Well, yeah, they should have traded him at the draft last year. That's when it should have happened. So that decision-making had very poor timing, and they paid for it. They paid for it because now all they have is an extra second to make use of. And granted, Garoppolo was a second-round pick himself, so maybe they can strike gold again in the second round with a guy like you mentioned as LaLetta, or maybe Mason Rudolph slips out of the first round into the second round. I don't see that happening. I think there's too many teams near the bottom of the first round that would find him appealing. New Orleans at 27 comes to mind. But, you know, they still, despite that blunder, have the assets to offer teams in the top 10 to see if they might be interested. The interesting thing, too, is the general consensus is there's probably only 20 players with true first-round grades in this draft class. Now, with all the quarterbacks that could go early, that could push some of that talent down into the early 20s. Can New England convince some team? You might have only 20 players with first-round grades, but six quarterbacks are going to go in the top 20 picks. That's going to push some of that talent down to you if you take our pick at 23. This is a pick of value. You should take it. Are we talking turkey? Are we making a deal? What are we doing? I think that's the pitch that New England's probably making if they want to get out at 23 and get up high on the board.
What about the reports? And you read varying reports you touched on a minute ago about Josh Rosen. A, does he seem like a quarterback that would interest Bill Belichick? And B, what would it take to move up to get him? Maybe just into the top 10, maybe on the fringes of the top 10 to get Josh Rosen, who for some reason finds his draft stock, at least in the public domain, people say, well, he's slipping a little bit.
I'll believe it when I see it. I think that's some team trying to drive his value down in the hopes that they can get in a position to get him. So then you look.
Patriots driving him.
Right, yeah. I mean, a team that can get up to 9 or, you know, as high as 5 or 6 if they give up the farm. Baltimore is a team that can get to 8 or to 7. And you know, we've already talked a little bit about Joe Flacco's play the last 2 years. I mean, it's been a free fall in terms of performance. I mean, he just hasn't put it together. Now, granted, there have been a lot of injuries at tight end and at wide receiver for the Ravens over the past couple of years. I mean, that's why they were desperate and went out and got Jeremy Maclin last year when he got cut free of the Chiefs in May. So, yes, there are some extenuating circumstances there, but I think at the same time, his play has fallen off precipitously. And he's 33, but I don't think he's a young 33 because his back is bad. He's had back problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore's looking around. I know Lamar Jackson's been the quarterback most closely tied to the Ravens, sitting there at 16. But if they feel that they can get up to 8 or 7, maybe even 6, if they give up their first, their second, and their third, I think that's another team that you got to watch out for also. I know on the Twitter poll it wasn't that popular an answer, but I don't think I think people are sleeping on the Ravens. I don't think people wholeheartedly believe they would go for a quarterback. But Flacco's played poorly for the last two seasons. I mean, that's enough to wake any GM up.
What do you think? Which team has the potential to foul up the Bills' plans if they do indeed have these plans to move up and get a quarterback? Is it the Patriots? Is it the Dolphins? Is it somebody else? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Tweet from Robert Bernard. I'm more concerned about everyone getting the studs who don't play quarterback. He capitalized that. That's why I'm saying that.
Studs, okay.
And do you know any other positions on a football field? Just curious. People are tired of talking about quarterbacks. I'm tired of talking about quarterbacks. But let's face it, it is the driving force into next week's draft. It is. It's what's motivating everything this next week. That's what's going to motivate everything, I think.
I think that's also why some Bills fans are a little bit hopeful, although not convinced, that if there's some way the Bills can move up slightly, still keep that second first-round pick at 22, it's very intriguing what could fall to them even that far down the board because of this quarterback frenzy.
Yeah.
If you've got four quarterbacks, you know, going in the top half of the first round, that's pushing some non-quarterback talent down the board. And so if you're still sitting there at 22, you got a real chance to get a top-notch player that can walk in and start on day one if that many QBs go off the board early. So if there is some way, even with some kind of move up the board by the Bills, to somehow hold on to their pick at 22, they could really have a windfall in round one on night one of the draft.
Love to hear from you on this. Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Which team, if any, are you concerned about beating the Bills to the punch and getting a first-round quarterback? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. We will break here. Chris is going to run out. He's going to have a conversation with Bills wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin as he is here at the offseason conditioning program. That's coming up next. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy in our One Buffalo studio on this Thursday afternoon in Orchard Park, where the Bills, a couple of hours ago, wrapped up week one of the off-season conditioning program. It is phase one of the program, mostly conditioning work, rehab work. One of the players involved in that, veteran wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin, and he's standing by right now, right outside the locker room with our man Chris Brown. Chris, take it away.
Thanks very much, Murph. That's right, here with Kelvin Benjamin. And Kelvin, week one is now in the books for the off-season conditioning program. You look a little leaner. Murph was saying you look a little leaner. Did you kind of drop some weight of going into this season? Was that a plan at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely wanted to come in to be one of my best OTAs, you know, with being in the league. So becoming a vet, just becoming more of a vet.
So total weight, though, is that the same? Because I know when guys want to add lean muscle mass, muscle weighs more than fat. So your total weight might not be down, but it's the right weight.
Yeah, it's the right weight, in the right places. Just leaned up around the waist. The abs are back out. I mean, stronger in my legs. You know, the better my knees.
Yeah, you mentioned your legs, and, you know, I know for the better part of the last four or five games last year, it's like you were playing on one leg, right? I mean, with that knee injury you suffered in L.A., talk to me about how difficult that was to kind of put yourself out there on the field. I know you wanted to show out for your team, but at the same time, you knew you weren't 100%.
I mean, not at all. I mean, my ACL leg was still bothering me. Then I tore my lateral meniscus on my right leg. I just wanted to keep pushing for the team. I know, you know, we were trying to make that push to the playoffs. And like I said, I was just trying to go out there and give it my all, you know, even though I was around like 60% at the time. But, you know, I still came up with big plays for the team at times. And with decoy at times, so, I mean, it worked out well for us.
And then with respect to the surgery you had to have in the offseason, are we good to go? We've got a clean bill of health now going forward. Are you doing everything out here?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm doing it. It's fun. It's definitely pushing you, though, and that's a good thing. And I'm trying to have fun with it and, you know, just build on from here.
So is it just about building strength back in that leg, or is it all the way back where you feel like the right one's just as good as the left?
My right leg, the one I had the torn meniscus on, that's definitely 100% right now. Okay. You know, I still feel that ACL in my patellar tendon a little bit, but, you know, they said that's just going to be there.
Okay.
So we ice it down pretty much after I get done working out on it. But, I mean, for the most part, yeah, I feel good.
The unique situation here that you walk into in your second season, first full season with the Bills. Number one, you've got a new position coach in Terry Rubisky. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just give me your initial impressions of him in the classroom? You know, that's a wily old coach that has been around and seen a lot. Just what are your initial impressions of Coach Rubisky?
I mean, just a lot of energy, bringing a lot of energy to the room. I mean, you know, he got so much history and so much that he can teach you. You know, he don't been in his game, you know, longer than a lot of the head coaches out here, so. You know, I'm grateful for having him. I'm grateful for him to be my teacher, and I'm just ready to get started.
At the same time, all of you guys in that room are kind of starting from the same jump-off point mm-hmm. with this new offense under Coach Dable. How much has that kind of bonded all of you guys, knowing you're all in the same boat, having to learn this thing together?
I mean, think just having a new room, you know, because you got to walk into the receiver room. You know, you got to kind of treat it like a brotherhood. You got to bring the guys together. You got to, you know, get that camaradership, and I think having a new playbook, you know, that's kind of bringing up the club because we're pushing each other to learn it, you know, and helping each other, you know, to learn it.
As much as you guys all want to get on the same page, the other unique part about 2018 is you do not yet know who your starting quarterback is going to be, mm-hmm. which is probably something you're not all that accustomed to, because when you got to Carolina, it was Cam Show and everybody knew who the starting quarterback was. How has that shifted your mindset in terms of trying to prepare for the season, executing this offense, when you don't yet know who's going to be throwing you the ball?
I mean, you got to just go about it. I mean, you know, like you said, you don't know. You know, you got to build that relationship with all the guys, you know, both of the guys for right now, AJ and Peterman. So, you know, just build that relationship with them because you don't know who's going to be the quarterback. But at the same time, you know, kind of watch them and see how they go about their business. You know what I'm saying? Because you want a quarterback that can lead mm-hmm. and you want a quarterback that you can, you're willing to follow. So, that's what I'm looking for as my quarterback.
And with that in mind, I know you had some exposure to Peterman last year, but what are your initial interactions been like with AJ, a guy who's been in the league for a little while?
I mean, he's very outspoken, man. I mean, you know, I feel like when he come out, he definitely takes control of the huddle. And, you know, like I said, you know, that's the first step. You definitely got to, you know, be outspoken and don't be scared, you know. Cause I think a lot of guys are – some quarterbacks be laid back, too laid back, you know. You got to kind of step out in front and put yourself out there, you know, and hope the team follow you.
And now that you've got a firm grasp of, you know, the AFC East, I know you didn't play all the teams, but you had four division games down the stretch there. You played the Patriots twice. You played the Patriots three times because I think Carolina played them early in the year, but you played the Dolphins. So do you feel you have a better handle on what to expect maybe from some matchups, what those defenses are like here in the division?
Oh, definitely. I mean, a lot of them was rolling coverages to my way. But, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a big season. You know what I'm saying? I just got to keep working and, you know, just take it day by day right now and just keep pushing myself and just get better. You know, like I said, I'm ready. And once we find out who the quarterback is, I mean, then we can just take off from there.
Very good. All right, Kelvin, listen, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate you hanging around a little bit after the workout finished about a half an hour ago. Go get your afternoon nap or whatever you got to do, and we'll see you out here on the field.
All right, thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Bills wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin here on the John Murphy Show. We'll send it back to you, Murph.
All right, thanks, Chris. I didn't know they had afternoon naps. Is that part of the schedule? Afternoon naps, part of the off-season conditioning program. Got to work that into our schedule, afternoon naps. Hey, we're talking a lot about schedule comes out later today. We can talk about that. Also, you know, the draft is a week away. We want to hear from you. Is there a team that you think you're worried about jumping over the Bills in the draft lineup and taking a quarterback the Bills are interested in? That's the topic of the day. Give us a call. Lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown going to rejoin us in studio in a moment. Come on back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more John Murphy. Chris Brown filling in today. Steve Tasker's back tomorrow. And then Monday, we start the big show, One Bills Live. You going to watch One Bills Live?
John? Sure.
Would you please?
I got a TV in my office.
Yeah, I know you do. You got three.
Well, yeah.
One is permanently on soccer.
No, yes. Not permanently.
Yes, I've gone by there. Only That's why I don't
Mondays,
hang out in there.
Only on Mondays and Wednesdays.
So. That's why I don't hang in there. And on Saturdays, Sundays, when do they have a soccer in the mornings and the weekends?
Oh, yeah, Saturday
You're
mornings.
Home watching that, right?
Usually.
Yeah. That's why I don't hang in your office.
That's why it's great, because it's 7:30 in the morning. Nobody's up yet. So I can just kind of
What do you do? Sip
grab
coffee
my coffee and
watch football.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris just came in from back out in the fieldhouse where we talked with Calvin Benjamin. Good to hear from Calvin. I was right. He didn't want to get into specifics, but he did lean up a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah. Said, I've got it in the right places now. It's not around. He doesn't have the spare tire.
Yeah.
You talk about the limitations that he did have last year with that knee injury. I mean, this is a guy that was not doing much of anything on Wednesdays and a little bit on Thursdays, and then get some reps on Friday and then drag himself out on the field on Sunday for the last month and a half of the season. You're not staying fit in the same ways that you typically are, especially at the receiver position, right, where, you know, them and cornerbacks have the lowest body fat percentages in the league by far, just because of the nature of their position, all the running that they do, and the fact that they do have to be lean so they can be quick and fast. And so that was taken from him, and he's a big guy. You know,
he
you're going to put you have a couple of big dinners, and you know, you're probably carrying 5, 6, 7 more pounds than you'd like to. So, you know, and I think also when you consider the fact that, as I was saying earlier, he turned into a post-up option
right
on offense, maybe you want a little extra so you can, you know, back a guy down and, you know, box him out, so to speak, to catch a football. So, you know, I applaud him because he was a new addition to this roster come the trade deadline, and he was a guy who had to learn the offense on the fly, but was seen immediately as someone who should make plays for them. And I think had he not gotten that knee injury in L.A. when his knee was grossly hyperextended and he tore his lateral meniscus, that he would have contributed more than he even did down the stretch.
I agree.
Even with the injury, and you heard him say, I was probably 60%, teams were still rolling coverage
right
his way.
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I hope he stays healthy, because I think he has a unique skill set and is a unique weapon in an offense because of his size and his smarts. I think he knows what to do with his size as well as any big receiver I've ever seen. And the post up is part of it. I hope he still does post people up.
Yeah.
But I'd let you know, obviously, if he's healthy and able to run more, he can add more components to his game. But I really think he has the potential, when healthy, to be a major weapon. Is he the number one receiver? I don't know. I almost don't care. I think he can be a really good, strong, solid weapon. And I'm going to repeat it. I think he's smart. I think he knows how to use his size and knows how to contribute to an offense. If he's healthy, he's a weapon, I think, for this team.
No question. And I would tend to believe that he is going to be the number one option. I mean, how can you not look at a 6'6" man and say, well, you know, we'll go to him when we have a chance? No, when you're in the red zone, that's your number one guy. You know, and I feel bad. I didn't ask him about Curley playing inside and how he thinks that might help him. You know, we'll ask him a question like that at a later time. But I think that will help at least draw some attention away from him in the passing game. If he's making a lot of plays underneath, hopefully that opens up opportunities for him, you know, down the sideline or in the back corner of an end zone, something like that. Hopefully that is the case. I didn't want to get into it with him. I didn't want to bring up a sore subject, but I'm still ticked about the touchdown he got taken away from him in New England, because that was a touchdown.
Yeah, no question. That would have been
and Al Riveron said as much at the owners' meetings.
It could have changed a lot of things, too, that touchdown, had it been properly officiated. Well, one other thing Calvin Benjamin told you, Chris, you asked about A.J. McCarron, and the quote, I wrote it down because it got my attention. Calvin Benjamin said he's very outspoken, takes control of the huddle. I mean, they haven't really had team huddles yet. They've been in meeting rooms. They've been out there for conditioning work. But already, it appears McCarron has made a pretty good impression on his teammates, including a veteran like Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah, and it's not like taking control of things is foreign, you know, to McCarron. I mean, he had to do that at Alabama for the better part of 2+ seasons in college. And I know college isn't the same animal as the NFL, but he's also seen Andy Dalton command things for the better part of the last four seasons. He knows what a leader looks like. You may not like Andy Dalton as a quarterback, but I think he is a consummate professional as a leader for those Cincinnati Bengals teams. And so I think AJ is taking a page out of that book, probably putting his own leadership skill set on it. And he knows this is my best opportunity that I've had since I've been in the league. And if I don't start from day one and take it with a take charge approach, my opportunity could disappear pretty quickly. And the dynamic of it could change very quickly in the span of a week. If the Bills do what everybody expects them to do and drafts a quarterback high in this draft.
All right. Hey, we're talking about, obviously, Kelvin Benjamin. Chris just finished up with him. But we're looming ahead. 1 week ahead is the draft, the NFL draft. And we want to know from you. You can ring us up. We got phone lines open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. We want to know from you, is there another team in this draft that you fear might jump up and ruin the Bills' quarterback plans? And who would that be? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. That's the Twitter poll. And let me recap what we're looking at on Twitter. Most people think it could be the Miami Dolphins, who are just ahead of the Bills. 53%, 54% say the Dolphins could most affect Buffalo's first-round draft plans. 30% say the Patriots. 14% say the Cardinals. 2% say the Ravens. A couple of comments on Twitter that I find interesting, too, on that topic. It is the prospect of possibly getting fouled up by the AFC East teams that has some Bills fans concerned. Dr. George Henderson tweets in, as a Bills fan, it would be devastating if all the majority of AFC East teams other than the Bills somehow outmaneuver this GM and snag a top quarterback. Imagine those quarterbacks beating us twice a year. How could the GM be forgiven if that happened? Just very nervous. Well, yeah. Outmaneuvering, yeah. I mean, that's why Chris is the work that Chris did to show us who's got what kind of draft capital is, I think, important when you look at the Dolphins with 8 picks and the Patriots with 8 picks, 2 ones, 2 twos. Outmaneuvered, yeah, but I mean, people go into this with different ammunition. People go into it with different coins in their pocket. So would it be outmaneuvering if they wind up with quarterbacks and the Bills don't? I guess so. You really have to blame somebody and say you screwed up. The Bills may want, here's my point. Bills may wind up without a first-round quarterback, and it'd be hard to blame anyone if that happens, because you can get the quarterback if you want if you're willing to pay too much. Somebody will let you pay them to move up if you're willing to do that. I'm not sure that Brandon Bean is willing to do that, right? It's all about the cost.
And you probably wouldn't know this as a GM. If you're Brandon Bean, you probably don't know this going in, but if the person you're looking to trade with is demanding more in exchange for that coveted pick, wherever it might be, top 10, top 5, if they're saying, look, I'm being offered more by X and Y and Z, this isn't going to cut it. You can call me back when you can step up your offer. You've got to be genuinely concerned that it's one of the other teams in your division, because you can make a case for every team in this division to take a quarterback.
Yeah.
The Jets certainly, okay, everybody is convinced they moved up to 3 to do that, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to convince anyone otherwise. The Dolphins have Ryan Tannehill at age 30 coming off an ACL and 2 disappointing seasons. You can make a case there that they're getting ready to turn the page. I mean, Tannehill may start this year, but if he's stinking up the joint, he could be out of the lineup by the time you get to October. And then the Patriots' uncertainty with what's left in Tom Brady's career. Sure, he's probably playing in 2018. What about 2019? What about 2020? They've got to groom somebody for the future also. So you can make a case for every other AFC East team. So if you're Brandon Bean, and yeah, in a perfect world, you don't want to overpay. But the Jets reset the market, and they did it in a way that's going to force, I believe, other teams that want to get up there to overpay based on what they gave up to get from where they were up to 3. So as I see it, I think whoever's going to try to get up there is going to have to pay an awful lot. And it's a matter of, what are you willing to part with? How badly do you want the quarterback you believe in? The second part of that is, and I don't think this comes into the decision-making equation for GMs, but there is the real concern that one of these other division teams may be the team that overpays. And do you want to overpay and say, we got our guy for the next 10 years? Or do you say, I'm not going to overpay, and then face that guy for the next 10 years?
And I believe
that's an ugly prospect. Isn't that ugly? Now you know why Dr. George Henderson feels the way he does.
Sean Piankowski, same thing. It's scary, he tweets in. knowing all the other AFC East teams are in play for a top quarterback. He says this draft might decide the East for some time. It might. It's critical. That's why there's so much discussion about this draft. The one thing about overpaying, if you get the right guy, nobody cares if that you overpaid, that you gave up next year's first rounder or two first rounders, two second rounders. If you get the franchise guy who's here for 10 years, anywhere for 10 years, and plays well and takes you to the playoffs, nobody will ask that question.
Do you think Philadelphia Eagles fans care that the Eagles don't have a second round pick this year, which was part of the Wentz trade 2 years
Absolutely
ago?
Absolutely not.
No way, Jose. No way. So if it's me, I'm inclined to overpay if it comes to that. You know, you make your offer that you feel is fair.
Right.
See where that goes. But with all of this competition, knowing that other teams have ammo, if I got over – knowing next year's quarterback class is nothing to write home about, I could be easily convinced to overpay. I'd rather have the guy than not have the guy. Right. I hate to say it.
If he's the guy, if you believe that he's the guy.
And that comes down to the courage of your convictions.
Right.
You've done work for the better part of a calendar year to be convinced one way or the other on somebody. So if you need, if you know where you need to get that guy, and that guy is on the board and you can pull the trigger and you have to overpay, you'd rather have the guy than not have the guy, I think.
I wonder if there's pressure on all of these GMs, including Brandon Bean, to sell yourself on the guy. To know that there's not a whole lot of good quarterbacks, at least at this stage in next year's draft, to know that it's the draft of where you come up with the franchise quarterback, and that you may think, well, got to get one. Yes, I love this guy. Maybe even if you don't.
Talk yourself into it. Yeah.
There'd be pressure to do that.
Right. I like to think that they don't fall into that trap, and I want to believe that the quantity of good quarterback prospects this year helps prevent GMs, whether it's Brandon Bean or anybody else, from doing that. Everybody's going to have their favorites. It's just like going to Baskin-Robbins and going to get your favorite of the 31 flavors. What flavor do you like in this draft the most? You know, if you want a pocket passer, if you love the accuracy, if you value upside more, these are all going to provide different answers based on who is in this draft pool. So as I see it, I think the chances of that happening, you know, convincing yourself, I do like this guy, I think they're lessened by virtue of the fact that you have four or five options here to choose from. I'm not saying a GM is saying, well, I like these two guys the best. As long as I can get one of these two guys, I'm good. You got to believe that the Jets are saying that, right?
Right, right.
Because moving up, they're satisfied with moving up to three to get a quarterback. Yep. Heck, they probably like three guys. There's probably three guys they know they'd be happy with. That's why they're comfortable sitting at three, because they know I'm going to get one of those three quarterbacks. We like all three of them. We believe all three of them are franchise caliber. I'm good at three. I'm going to get somebody I'm going to be happy with. So maybe there are two guys in the pool that they see as franchise caliber. Perhaps there's three. Some teams, who knows? Maybe they think there's four guys that are franchise caliber.
It's a fascinating draft. It's a week away. We'll talk more about it coming up in the next hour. If you're hanging on hold, stay there. We'll get to your calls in a moment. If you'd like to join us, we do have phone lines open. 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. What do you think? Is there a team out there that is going to ruin Buffalo's plans, potential plans to go up and get a quarterback in this year's draft? We'll revisit that when we return. Chris Brown stays with us right till 3 o'clock today. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills have wrapped up their first week of their organized team workouts, their off-season conditioning program. It ended today. 4 days this week, 4 days next week. Phase one of the program, mostly dealing with conditioning and injury rehabilitation. It ended about an hour and a half ago. Meantime, the Bills and the rest of the NFL awaiting release of the schedule comes out at 8 p.m. tonight. We know who the Bills will play, and we know whether they play them at home or on the road, but we find out tonight at 8 what times, when, how many primetime games, where's the bye week, etc. All coming out tonight at 8 o'clock. You can get details at BuffaloBills.com. The league has announced a couple of details about the upcoming schedule. They're going to be slightly earlier start times for games on Monday, Thursday, and Sunday nights. Monday Night Football will start at 8:15, 15 minutes earlier than it did last year. Thursday Night Football will move from an 8:25 p.m. start to 8:20. And Sunday Night Football will start at 8:20 p.m. as opposed to 8:30, where it's been the last couple of years. NFL release of the schedule coming out tonight at 8 o'clock. The league did release dates and times for a couple of games in London this year. Seahawks play Oakland at Tottenham Stadium at 1 p.m. on October 14th, 1 p.m. Eastern. Tennessee plays the Chargers at Wembley October 21st at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And the Eagles play Jacksonville at Wembley the following week, October 28th, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. The Mexico City game between the Chiefs and the Rams will take place on November 19th at 8:15 p.m. So that'll be a Monday night game, second Monday night game from Mexico City coming up in November. The entire schedule coming out tonight at 8 o'clock. Matt Forte, former Chicago Bears great running back, and Devin Hester, return specialist, will both sign one-day ceremonial contracts next Monday with the Bears in order to retire as members of the organization. Forte and Hester each spent their first eight seasons with the Chicago Bears. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Chris Brown in studio with us here on the show today, joining us in place of Steve Tasker, who will be back tomorrow. And then Steve starts in earnest on Monday as he begins his regular co-hosting duties, Monday through Friday, noon to 3. One Bills Live starts on Monday. Looking forward to that. Talking today about the draft, we do almost every day. Not necessarily which quarterback, but the kind of draft strategy, and we want you to think about this a little bit, the draft strategy involved for the Buffalo Bills and the 31 other teams in the NFL. Look, we know it's a draft that has several interesting quarterback prospects. There have been already a couple of moves up and down the draft board by teams. What do you think could still happen before the Bills select next Thursday night, a week from tonight? The draft starts at 8 o'clock. And which other NFL team has the potential to maybe ruin Buffalo's plans? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You're kind of thinking the Patriots might be that team?
I worry about them only because of the ammo that they have. They've got two ones, two twos. And really, just to get it, let's just say Josh Rosen does, in fact, slide. Let's say he slides past Indy at, you know, past Denver at five. So now Indy at six, probably not taking him unless somebody jumps up. Tampa Bay, probably not taking him. At seven, Chicago, not taking him at eight. So now the slide is on. I think if that happens, people are going to be ringing phones off the hook for picks 7, 8, 9, and 10, trying to get up there. And I think the Bills are going to have to be one of those teams, because a team like the Patriots, just by giving up both first-round picks, can get up to 9 because they pick at 23 and 31. Or with their pick at 31 and both of their second-round picks, they can get up to 9. They can even get up to 5 or 6 using both of their ones and one of their two second-rounders. So the Patriots absolutely have the ammunition to get up there into the top 10 and really kind of rain on the parade that the Bills have been trying to put in place here to be in position to move where they need to get a quarterback prospect.
Chris has done the spade work kind of identifying who's got the draft capital, and the Miami Dolphins, picking one spot ahead of the Bills, have 8 picks, including 2 fourth-rounders. The Bills with their 9 picks, 2 twos, 2 second-rounders, 2 third-rounders. Patriots, 8 picks, that's a lot, including 2 first-rounders and 2 second-rounders. It's an interesting list because it shows you that, you know, you got 8 or 9 picks. The Bills have 9. That's good. But some teams have, you know, all picks are not created equal. I guess that's the point here, Chris.
Right, because like a team like the Packers, for example, which our MSG viewers are viewing right now, they have 12 total picks, but a lot of their capital is in the later rounds. They've got 3 picks in the 4th round, and they've got 3 picks in the 5th round, 2 picks in the 4th round. So a lot of their draft capital is towards the back half of the draft. I don't think there really are too many teams that have as much capital as the Bills do with 6 picks right now in the top 100. The Patriots, I believe, are one of the only other teams. I think they have 5 in the top 100. Yeah, they do. So they've got the 2 ones, the 2 twos, and then pick 95. So there aren't many teams that have that much. And so the Bills, you know, have some pretty prominent capital to work with, and you would hope that that's the difference maker for them. But if some other team strikes first or some other team chooses to overpay, you got a problem. You got a problem.
What do you think? Give us a call. Which team do you are you on the lookout for as the Bills get set up? Charlie on the line from the west side of Buffalo. Charlie, go ahead. What do you think?
Hello, guys. How you doing today? The team that put a thought in my mind as of yesterday, the Arizona Cardinals, guys, I think they're going to be a surprise and give up a lot to get a quarterback. And I need to ask you guys a question while I have you on the phone. What do you think about that kid from Richmond and the Washington State quarterback? Are they worth drafting in the second round or no? That's all I got to say. But the team that I'm nervous about now is Arizona's going to give up a lot to move up to get one of these quarterbacks. That's all I got to say, guys. Have a good day now.
Well, as Chris's chart points out, the Cardinals have 8 picks, but most of that's in the third round. They have, what, 2 picks
two
in
threes.
The third round.
Now, looking at their draft capital, they can get up to 5 or 6, but they'd have to give up a 1, a 2, and a 3 to do that. They have 2, so that would still leave them with a 1 to get the quarterback they want, and they'd still have a third-round pick left over. Is that enough? Do they want to part with that much capital to do that? It's year one for Steve Wilks out there. I'm sure he'd love to get a franchise quarterback if he believes that that's the guy. I mean, they've got a situation out there where they really don't have a definitive answer. They have Sam Bradford, who they acquired in free agency. I think all Sam Bradford does is buy them time. I think he's their bridge quarterback, and with his health history, you have to believe they want to get a young quarterback in the pipeline there to groom and start as early as 2019. So they might be inclined to get up the board and make that kind of a move. They can get up to 5 or 6 without even talking about future picks. You know, they can use a 1, a 2, and a 3 to get up to about 5 or 6 based on, you know, the old and admittedly somewhat outdated draft value chart. So, yeah. You know, that's where that sits.
Yes, about a couple of quarterbacks, Kyle Lauletta from Richmond. Our Lads, my favorite draft preview, Our Lads Scouting Services, they have Lauletta listed as a third-round prospect. Now, given the way that quarterbacks are drafted, Lauletta could wind up in the second round, I would think. Not likely to be a first-rounder, Chris, right?
Not a first-rounder, no. You know who I think of when I watched Kyle Lauletta at the Senior Bowl this year? When I watched him there all week, he was just a guy who got the job done. He's not a guy that's going to wow you like, whoa, look at that throw, or holy cow. It's more like, oh, that was a good decision. Okay, that was good. Oh, he hit the target again. You know, he just kind of get you don't sit up in your chair and say, wow, look at Kyle Lauletta, but you sit there and say, oh, wow, there's another play that he made. Oh, there, you know, that you like the consistency of his game. And the player that I thought about who came to mind when I was watching Kyle Lauletta was Matt Schaub, the old Virginia quarterback, who I believe was a third-round pick. But I think Lauletta's got a chance to climb into the back half of the second round in this draft. As we know, as you mentioned, Murph, quarterback values rise as you get to the draft because teams get antsy. They don't want to miss on a guy. They want to get their guy when they can. And so even if the value may not be perfect, I think sometimes quarterback values get inflated. And I think Lauletta is probably – he and Mason Rudolph are probably that next tier after Lamar Jackson. You know, I think Mason Rudolph could very easily get pushed into the bottom half of the first round.
Yeah.
Just because if a lot of those guys go early, whether it's 4 in the top 10 or 5 in the top 15, I think the pressure will be on for a team to take Mason Rudolph late in round 1. As I mentioned earlier in the show, New Orleans at 27 comes to mind, looking for an heir apparent to Drew Brees. So, yeah, I think Lauletta could be a late second round pick. Luke Falk, I think, is a little further back.
Yeah, our lad's got him as a 6th rounder.
Yeah, I don't know if he's that late, but I think he's a day 3 pick. You know, at best round 4, probably at worst round 6. I mean, he's got some impressive statistics through the course of his career. He didn't wow me at the Senior Bowl because he was there too. I noticed Lauletta far more than I did Falk. And Falk gets knocked also for playing in that Mike Leach offense, which they feel creates inflated statistics. He's had some injury problems that he had to deal with through the course of his college career. But, yeah, I think he's more of a day 3 guy. Where he goes, I think, is anybody's guess.
Which team, which NFL team of the other 31 could beat the Bills to the punch when it comes to drafting a quarterback in the first round? What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Got a call here from Steve in West Seneca. Go ahead, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I tend to think it'll be New England because they beat us on the field on the field for over 10 years, and they seem to have more four-leaf clovers in their pockets than anybody I know. Hang up.
Yeah, maybe they have four-leaf clovers. Chris, I think you called this to our attention. It was a year ago. Patriots, is all of their success, you can't take anything away from their success on the field. You know, AFC Championships, Super Bowls. They have not been the best drafting team in the NFL in several years.
Yeah, historically.
Their draft picks are not that impressive.
Yeah, historically, they don't draft very well. And that is why we have seen them make player trades. more often. I mean, you could go all the way back to the days when they traded a fourth-round pick for Randy Moss, traded a fourth-round pick to Oakland for Randy Moss. Obviously, that was huge for them. But they seem to be more successful in identifying talent once it's playing in the league than pulling it straight out of college. Whether it's Belichick or Caserio, whoever is making those calls, and presumably it's Belichick, I think they do a better job of identifying talent that can help them once they see it in the league, as opposed to projecting the talent from college to the NFL. And their draft record, I think, proves that. You know, they've had their share of hits. There's no question about that. Everybody mentions Rob Gronkowski every single time, you know, getting him as a second-round selection. And there have been other guys that they've been able to pick up in the draft, but there have been far more misses than hits. And very often that's why they're either A, in the trade game, or B, in the free agency game, trying to mix and match parts there because their draft success has been very limited.
803-0550, the number to call if you have comments, questions, maybe an answer to our question, which team might beat the Bills to the punch when it comes to drafting a quarterback. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Let's go take a call here from Douglas in Rochester. Hi, Douglas. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Great. Thank you.
Cool. Here to tell you about how we're going to get the number four pick from Cleveland after they pick their guy number one, and their second guy, Barkley, goes to the Giants at number two. We already have an established relationship with the Tyrod trade with their front office, so I really think this is something that might materialize for us. I'll let you guys take it from there.
Can I say this, and with all due respect, Douglas, I think that existing relationship stuff is a little bit overplayed. I hear people say it about
Gettleman
and Brandon Bean. They worked together for a couple of years. Look, these guys are cutthroat competitors. They're going to make a move based on what's best for them. And, you know, there's only 32 of these guys, GMs, and they all have each other's numbers, and there's no barriers to communication between them. So I don't know that there's much to be said about an existing relationship or Gettleman work with Bean. I just don't know that they cut each other breaks or slack based on existing relationships.
I don't think they cut each other breaks, but I do think that Brandon Bean knows what Dave Gettleman likes and could package something in such a way to make it appealing to Gettleman because he knows what his preferences are. He knows what he likes. He knows what he values.
But Gettleman's not going to cut him a break because we worked together for 4 years.
No. There's going to be no hometown or previous working relationship discounts. There is a history with Dorsey that goes back even to last year because, you know, Sean McDermott and the GM at that time, Doug Whaley, made a deal with him in the first round last year. And maybe you read some insight into that. I think that's probably a little bit of a stretch. Here's the thing. The question on the table right now is, do the Browns part with their pick at four if they get the quarterback at one? They currently have 9 picks right now. They have 2 in the first round, 1 and 4, and they have 3 second-round selections. So what are you giving the Browns to get to 4 that's going to convince them, yeah, we'll slide back to 12? You better give them a whole lot of other stuff. And I'm inclined to believe that the Browns have enough draft capital in this year's draft where to get to 4, you may have to give them a 1 next year where they're looking to stockpile again for the next season, build again next year. That's what they did last year, if you remember. The Browns were trading and acquiring future picks. That's why they've got the draft capital they have now, because of what they traded away and gave up and slid back to get all these picks in this year's draft. I wouldn't be surprised if that is what they are after, if they're even going to listen at 4. Because you got a chance to have who you feel is the best quarterback on the board and one of probably the top 2 non-quarterback players in this draft at 4. You got to give them one whale of an offer, I think, to convince them not to take that. Bird in the hand right now is worth far more, if I'm the Browns, than what you've got sitting over there in the bush.
2 things. I've heard it suggested over the recent weeks and all this draft run-up that because they have so much draft capital, the Browns would somehow wouldn't value their picks as much as somebody else. I disagree with that.
I don't think it's a question of value. I think it's a question of, we've got enough to work with this year. If you want to make me an offer, I'll listen. But if you want to really tempt me to move out of here at 4, talk to me about 2019. Yeah, what can you give me in 2019 that's going to keep me interested?
And let me talk about 2019 from the Bills' perspective for a moment. I heard Howard and Jeremy talking about this morning on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR. I think it was both of them, maybe just one of them, of the belief that Brandon Bean in no way would want to part with 29 picks, especially his first rounder, because he believes the Bills are going to be, get a top 10 pick next year, and they're going to have a bad 2018, and that pick will be valuable. I don't know. And
that's
from what
pretty
I know,
presumptuous.
I don't think Brandon Bean thinks like that. Look, he knows what a first-round pick is worth, whether it's top 10 or bottom 10 in the first round, but I don't think he thinks like that. What do you mean presumptuous? What do you think?
I think it's presumptuous to assume they're going to have a top 10 selection.
I do.
Everybody
too.
Thought they were going to have a top 10 pick this year.
Exactly.
I mean, they were. Yeah. Where were they? We're at 21.
Yeah.
And 22. And they've enhanced that position, and they're probably where a lot of people felt they were going to be at the outset, sitting up there around 10, 12, 14, somewhere in there. And that's where they sit now after some work in a trade with Cincinnati. I don't think you can close yourself off to parting with draft capital in the future if you know and if you are convinced you're getting your quarterback for the next 10 or 12 years. And again, we come back to the courage of your convictions. People say, well, how can you give that up? We've done the research. It's been exhaustive. We've done our due diligence. We've talked to everybody, including, the middle school nurse at the guy's middle school, asking him about bumps and bruises that he had. How did he handle those? You know, did he refuse the Band-Aid? These guys cut it so fine that after a year's worth of work, they know. And they should have a convincing opinion on where they feel that player is going to project and if they've got the stones to be the player they believe they can be at the quarterback position in this league. And if that is the case, I think you move heaven and earth to get the guy. The Bills have gone far too long in their history, the better part of the last 20 seasons, without that guy. So if you feel you can get that guy, and the difference between getting him and not getting him is a 2019 second-round pick, pull the trigger.
Karen, let me help you pull the trigger,
yeah.
Right? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown in studio with us. We are a week away from the NFL draft next Thursday night, 8 p.m., and we're talking with you about the other teams that might be interested in a quarterback. Which team could beat the Bills to the punch when it comes to selecting a quarterback in the first round next Thursday? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about that. Here's a call from Jim in Rochester. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Well, I don't understand these teams, including the Bills, that will just be willing to move up to 4 or 5. Unless they love all four quarterbacks, I think they have to get up, and I'm a Giant fan, I think they have to get up to 2, because 1 and 3 are going to take quarterbacks. So that's 2 out of the top 4. And if you're the Bills and you move to 5, unless you're in love with all four quarterbacks and think of them equally, you're not going to get the quarterback you want. I think you have to deal with 2, my Giants. I really do. I don't see anything otherwise. Cleveland has already said their general manager, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, twice to their fan base, that they're not going to trade down for 2 reasons. They have enough draft capital, and it's time they this organization, the football, starts turning this draft capital into blue chippers. So I don't think Cleveland's going to move down. So that's any of these teams, not just the Bills, because he was 5, except for the Giants. If the Giants pick, you're going to get one of the 2 you like.
Jim, I'm inclined to agree with most of what you say, and I agree with this part mostly. I don't think the Bills are really – I don't follow the other teams as closely. I don't think the Bills have a list of 4 they can live with or trade up for.
Right.
Think it's probably 2. It's 2, and I agree with you on that. I would say this. I know I've seen what the Browns have told their fans about. They have enough draft capital, not trading down. I just think in the following week, the week that remains for the draft, anything can happen. Anything has already happened with some of the trades made. I wouldn't lock that in.
Even if you move to 4, you know – probably, 2 are going to be gone.
Yeah.
And probably 3 if the Giants trade out of there to the team that trades up for them. So probably 3 of your 4. So even if you're sitting at 4, you're probably not going to get the guy you want anyway.
Well, here's the thing that I'll counter with that. I'll play devil's advocate for a second here, Jim. I think what is at work here is the wait-and-see approach, which means let's wait and see who Cleveland takes. Cleveland may take a quarterback that we don't believe is one of the 2 best in this draft. Maybe they do us a favor and take one of the guys we don't consider as highly on our board, and that affords us the option to try to trade 2-4, knowing at 2, if the Giants sit there, they could take, or maybe they do take the quarterback. There is a risk. I'm not going to deny for a second that there's a risk, but it wouldn't surprise me if a bunch of teams wait and see who the pick is by Cleveland, because let's just say they like Josh Allen, and they take Josh Allen. Well, maybe there's two or three other teams that didn't have Josh Allen as one of their top two QBs. They've just done those teams a favor. Now, do the Giants sit there at 2 and take who they want? Sure, they may take a non-quarterback. What if Sam Darnold's there, which is the quarterback that apparently the Giants like the most and would consider taking it to? Maybe they take him at 2. Now you do have a problem. So it is a risk. I don't think there's any question about that, Jim. If you want to reduce the risk, yeah, you go up to 2 and try to make a deal with the Giants.
Good point, Jim. Thanks very much for calling. Let's take a call here from Joe in Tonawanda. Go ahead, Joe. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, man?
Great. Thank you.
I got a question for you, though. I agree with you. You got to make a trade, but just from listening to the New York stations and all that, the best I could see the Bills doing is moving up to 5 or 6. There's nobody in this draft that can move ahead of us. Like, Miami doesn't have the capital that we have. New England, I'm not worried about them. If we want to move up, we got enough draft capital to beat both of them. But if you're the Bills, like, do you put a number on each quarterback? Like, let's say Darnold, I'm going to give away 2 firsts, a 2nd, and a 3rd. Rosen, I might get 2 firsts and a 2nd. Allen, I'm not as high on. I'm going to give away 2 firsts. You know, do the Bills do something like that, or just for all the 4 quarterbacks, do they just put them in one box and say, okay, if we get any one of these guys, we'll give away 2 firsts, a 2nd, and a 3rd? Or is that how is that a strategy that they use?
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably have something like that. Wouldn't you think, Chris? Now, I don't know if it goes 4 quarterbacks deep. I have a hard time believing that they feel that strongly about 4 quarterbacks. I mean, there might be, of the top 4 quarterbacks, there might be 2 that they really like. The other 2, they say, well, if they slip to 12 and we're still there, maybe we think about it. But sure, I think for the quarterbacks they want, I'd be shocked if they don't have some sort of scenario in their head. Here's what it would take. I think about our guest yesterday, Tony Pauline, who said, what do you call it, an agreement in principle between the Bills and the Giants. I mean, I'm sure they've done that kind of work, don't you think, Chris?
Yes, and while I think they would apply a value system to what they'd be willing to surrender to get a particular prospect, in the end, it doesn't come down to who. It comes down to the pick, because other teams in the NFL may not give 2 hoots and a holler about Josh Rosen. They care about the pick. In the end, it's more about positioning than it is about the player, because you got 32 NFL teams who have different grades on all of these guys. Some might be slim in terms of a difference of opinion. Like, I've got to believe that most teams have Saquon Barkley at the top of their board, you know, give or take a few spots. But there are differing opinions on these quarterbacks. I don't think there's any question about that. So the value that is uniform is the pick. The 3rd pick in the draft is, you know, worth 2,200 points. That's universal. So you may say, well, we would give up this much for Josh Rosen, and we'd give up this much for Sam Darnold. But if the bottom line is you got to get to pick 3 for either of them, you're paying what pick 3 is worth,
right?
Not what those players are worth to you. So you can talk about value and what you'd give up for either of those guys, but if you feel you've got to get to a certain spot on the board to get one of them, it's all about what the pick is worth, not what you feel the player is worth to you.
Well, I think if you have an idea of what the player is worth, and you say, well, that's what that 3rd overall pick is worth, but that's not what this player is worth, we're not paying that price, right?
You know what? Then you're sitting and waiting for the next guy, or hoping that the guy slides.
I don't think you can blindly say, well, it's the 3rd pick, this is what it costs. No, it's the 3rd pick, this is what it costs. Is this player worth that price? Don't you think that's the way it goes?
Yes. I mean, you have a player in mind when you're going there. I'm just saying I don't think you can arbitrarily apply a pick value, you know, a draft capital asset value to Sam Darnold, because you don't know where you have to go to get him yet. And then once you do, if you find out it's more, now you're not going to get him because this is what we said?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the price we're willing to pay for that player.
Your number one quarterback on your board, he's there.
This is the price we're willing to pay. I'm not saying you're locked into it forever, but this is the price we decided we're willing to pay. Now you get to you need the other guy, the other team to cooperate. Maybe that doesn't get the job done.
And you also got to hope, as we're talking today, that one of those other is willing to pay a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they're in your division. You're paying them twice a year for 10 years.
It's going to be a great draft next Thursday. Which team could beat the Bills to the punch when it comes to drafting a quarterback in the first round? Give us a call. Give us your thoughts. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Chris and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown in studio with us today until 3 o'clock, filling in as host. Steve Tasser's here tomorrow. On Monday, whole new show, One Bills Live. Steve will be here. We're excited. We just showed Brownie some of the promo.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Steve Tasker's pretty funny. He's pretty funny. This is a guy, I asked him the other day, how many of those commercials have you done for that auto dealership? He said, I don't know, a couple hundred. I said, thousands. You have to have done thousands. He's just good. He's a natural performer. Yeah. He's unbelievable. He puts me to shame. He will, too. Well, maybe not. He's good. All I'm saying is Steve is really good, and we learned it shooting our promos the other day. Brownie's pretty good. He's here today. We're talking about the draft, obviously, a week away. The schedule comes out tonight at 8 o'clock. On the draft, Chris, we're talking about which teams might move up and get past the Bills in the first round to get one of those premium quarterbacks. We talked about how Chris has done the work on draft capital. Might not be exactly what you think, but you've also done a little work on recent drafts and what it took to move up and get quarterbacks, right?
Right,
it takes
a lot. Basically. Just kind of looked at some recent history. We went all the way back to 1990 and the Jeff George draft. You know, Jeff George is the first pick in the draft in 1990. Colts gave up a fifth-round pick that year. First-round pick in 91. Offensive tackle Chris Hinton and wide receiver Andre Rison to get up to one overall to take Jeff George. And George started every game in 91. The Colts went 1-15. Only lasted a few years there, as you know, and then stayed in the NFL for over a decade due mainly to the fact that he had this rocket arm. He just wasn't very consistent with that rocket arm and really wasn't a great leader either. Not considered to be a great teammate.
So that's three players you mentioned?
Hinton and Rison, a first-round pick the following year, and their fifth-round pick.
That's 28 years ago. It's a long time ago.
Right.
And I think things have changed. First of all, I don't anticipate you. Do you think players will be moving around next week as teams move up? I guess they could. Seems like teams are more.
I think players could be part of the equation. I wouldn't say multiple players necessarily, but maybe a player.
That's why that seems unusual. A long time ago.
And not to completely dismiss Jeff George, he did lead the league in passing with the Raiders in 97 before it was over.
Yeah.
Ryan Leaf. This is the well-documented one. Would they do a 30 for 30 on this one?
Yes.
So the Chargers gave up first and second round pick in that year, 98. Gave up a first-round pick the following year, 99. Gave up kick returner Eric Metcalf, linebacker Patrick Sapp, to get the second pick where they took Ryan Leaf, who, as we know, was out of the league after 4 years.
Yeah.
14 touchdowns, 36 picks in his career.
Oh, man.
That one hurt.
It hurts hearing that kind of history because you know that could happen again.
It probably will happen to one team this year.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean,
somebody's going to miss.
I looked back, and I don't want to interrupt you. You got more to do. I look back at the 83 draft, famous quarterback draft, six quarterbacks first round. That could happen next week.
That's the record, by the way.
Three of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Three of them were pretty much busts. It would seem to me that's kind of.
Well, evident. Hold on a second here. At least Ken O'Brien made a couple of Pro Bowls.
Here comes the Jets fan.
Well, I didn't say I'm a Jets fan, but. The Jets don't deserve much credit for anything.
Not a bust.
When it comes to the draft. But I wouldn't call Ken O'Brien a bust. He did get them to the playoffs a couple of times and did make a couple of Pro Bowls. Tony Eason, he got to a Super Bowl. I don't know if you would argue it was because of him.
It wasn't.
Todd Blackledge is probably the biggest bust of that group, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And then Eason, and then probably O'Brien somewhere in the middle there.
Three Hall of Famers, though, in a class of six first-round quarterbacks. And then what was the other draft? More recently, a couple of years ago, right? There were
2004,
five.
You're talking about?
Yeah, five.
Lossman's the miss.
Yes.
Roethlisberger wins two Super Bowls. Eli Manning wins two Super Bowls. Rivers is very good, but no Super Bowl rings.
Right. Go ahead. You have more.
I did. I've got I think a lot of people forgot that the Falcons traded up to get Michael Vick with the first pick in the 2001 draft. So what did they give up for the first pick in the draft? They gave up their pick at 5, pick 67, which was a third-round pick in 2001, that same year. They gave up a second-round pick in 02, and kick returner Tim Dwight.
Hmm.
So again, these first three that I mentioned involve players.
Right.
On rosters. So I found that was probably the most interesting thing I found. Then we get to 2004. We remember Eli Manning. I'm not playing for the Chargers, even though they picked me. So now the Giants draft Phillip Rivers. They send Phillip Rivers to the Chargers. They also send first pick in the third round, 65, and then first and fifth round picks the following year. So they give up a 3 that year with Phillip Rivers, who was taken at 4, and then they also give him a first and a fifth the following year.
That's not really like trading a player. That's more like trading a first and a fourth, and then a first and a fifth the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a lot. But
you know,
got 2 Super Bowls out of it.
Worth it, though.
And he's still playing.
Yeah.
Then comes the horrific Robert Griffin III move by Washington, who had the 6th pick that year. So they trade that pick to move up to 2 with the Rams. They also trade pick 39 that year. So they give up their 1 and their 2 in 2012. First round pick the following year, 2013, and the first round pick in 2014.
Ooh. Ooh.
All to move up 4
Ooh.
Spots. If you think the Jets overpaid with 3 twos to move up 3 spots from 6 to 3, how about Washington
wow.
in 2012? Their pick at 6, a second rounder, and then 2 more 1s.
Ooh.
They gave up 3 1s and a 2 to get up 4 spots to
wow.
take Robert Griffin III. And we all remember he had a breakout rookie season, and then his knee turned into jello, and his career went to jello pretty quickly after that.
Now, let me just stop you for a second. You were saying before we went to the break a moment ago how if the guy is there that you want, price shouldn't be that much of a factor. There's an example of obviously they liked RG3, but they paid way too much. And not even knowing what we know, RG3 could have been a good player. He had the good year, could have had a good career. He did not. But aside from that, that's an awful lot to pay to move up four spots. Four spots.
I'm not giving up that much.
No. Okay,
I might,
good. I'm glad to hear you say
I'd be willing to part with a 1 next year if it meant the difference between getting my guy and not.
I guess I would.
I'm not giving up 2 1s. I'm not giving up a 1 next year and a 1 the year after that.
That's crazy.
That is ludicrous.
Who else you have?
That's Washington for you. Jared Goff. You know, we remember the Rams went up to the top of the board to take Jared Goff first overall. They were picking 15th that year. So they give up 5th. They gave up a lot, too. They gave up their pick at 15, 2 twos at 43 and 45, a 3, pick 76, all that year. So they gave up their 1 at 15, 2 twos, and a 3 to get up to the top of the board.
From midway down 15 to
15.
That's not bad.
And, hold on.
Oh.
A first and a third round pick the next year.
Oh, never mind.
2017.
All right, that's the price.
That's an awful lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 picks, including a pair of ones, a pair of basically 2 1s, 2 2s, and 2 3s to go from 15 to 1.
All right, that is.
That's too rich for my blood.
That's a lot.
I'm bid out on that one.
Yeah.
I am cashing in the chips and going home. You know, and Jared Goff looked like a mistake. Now, I should say this. They did get more than just the pick at 1 back. They did get pick 113 and 171. I think that's a 4 and a 5, if my math is right, in return for all of that draft capital they gave up. And fortunately for them, things started to turn around, you know, with Sean McVay running the offense there. He catered it more to Jared Goff's strengths, and he came around, and they're a playoff team in year two under Jared Goff, and he looks well on his way if he continues on his current track. Carson Wentz.
Same year.
Right. So they had the pick at 8. Had to move up to 2. So they gave up 8, 77, which is round 3, pick 100, which is early round 4 that year, and then give up a 1 in 17 and a 2 in 18 just to move up 6 spots.
But that seems okay to me, doesn't it? A 1, a 2.
So all total, Eagles give up 2 1s.
Right.
a 2, a 3, and a 4.
That seems okay to me. 2-1s, one of them being the pick, you know.
Yeah, the pick that they exchanged. Yeah, right. And so that they get the second pick. Steep. And they got a fourth-round pick back. So they got the pick at 2 and a fourth-rounder that same year in 17, or the following year in 17. And, you know, we know what Wentz has been able to do. And that was a team that was convinced after sitting down with him at the Combine. Actually, the Eagles website, eagles.com, after Wentz's rookie year, they ran the Combine interview from the room.
I remember that. I remember
on their
that.
Site. It was fascinating to watch it, just watching them grill him and put him up on the board. And he's not only giving them the answer they want, he's giving them additional options. He's saying, well, what are you going to do with this play call against this look? What's your protection? And he just rattles off a protection. He rattles off this. He goes, well, another option here is I could call it this way, and we could slide protection in this way, and I can move the back over here and also do this. That's another option, too. And they were just – he had answers upon answers. And the way they described it was, we thought he was good with the X's and O's, but when we put him on the board – it was almost idiot savant territory with the number of answers he was able to provide them.
Yeah.
He far exceeded their expectations. And after that interview, bang, I mean, they stamped him as the guy they were going to go up and get and move heaven and earth to go get him. And that's what they did. You hope that the Bills or any other team that feels they need that had that light bulb moment in one of these interviews, whether it was on a pre-draft visit or at the combine, and know, we got to give up a little extra to get this guy, he's worth it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. You hope that's that.
If they do give up a little extra, I think it would stand to reason, whether or not they admit it or show us the video of his combine interview or whatever,
right,
it would stand to reason that they did have that kind of moment with him, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Right?
I would agree.
If they make a big, bold move to move up. You got one more from last
year's
draft.
Yes. Mitchell Trubisky, as we all know, the Bears looked like they were in panic mode when they did this because they were sitting there at 3, and I don't know, they got the heebie-jeebies and said, we got to get up to 2 to make sure we get this guy. I don't know what intel they got from somewhere that someone was trying to get up to 2, and maybe it was true. And it was interesting because I saw on the 49ers website, they kind of went through this again. You know, they reviewed last year's draft when they agreed to slide back from 2 to 3. And this is John Lynch's first draft as a GM for San Francisco, and they wanted Solomon Thomas badly, and they were nervous about sliding back from 2 to 3 because they didn't know who Chicago wanted. They were worried that Chicago may want Solomon Thomas. And, of course, you never know from the team you're trading with who they're taking. They just say, look, I just want to go get my guy at 2. So there was a little risk there, but I think they were convinced, oh, they're probably moving up to get a quarterback here. So the Bears give up their pick at 3, along with a third-rounder at 67 and a fifth-rounder at 111. No, that's a fourth-rounder at 111 and a third-round pick in 2018. So they give up a 1, a 3, a 4, and a 3-18 to move up
one spot.
And the jury's still out on Trubisky, but he did show some encouraging signs toward the end of last season. Didn't have a whole lot to work with. His entire receiving corps was hurt. His offensive line, suspect on one side, and really no defense. So you're very often playing from behind, and defenses are teeing off on you.
You know what strikes me, Chris? You've just went through, 28 years worth of trade-ups to get quarterbacks. Teams really have to have a strong commitment, and sometimes it works. I mean, how many different quarterbacks are you looking at there? 8, maybe?
Yeah.
4 of them really good moves. 4 of them maybe a little
bit. Jeff George is a thumbs down. Right. Ryan Leaf's a thumbs down. Michael Vick's probably a thumbs up until the dog thing hit.
Yeah.
Eli Manning's a thumbs up. Griffin's a thumbs down. But that's circumstance, I think. Injury. I mean, who knows what his career would have been if he didn't blow his knee out.
And if they didn't
Shanahan's still coaching there and, you know, that kind of stuff. Goff's probably a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Wentz is a thumbs up. Trubisky's a jury's out.
Yeah, maybe 5 of the 8 or 4 or 5 of the 8. But you really got to have a strong commitment, and you got to be ready to pull the trigger. We get a lot of calls and tweets and stuff over the last several weeks. And people say, yeah, stay where you are. You know, you got holes to fill. Okay, you can do that, and that might be what they wind up doing. But if you're looking for a quarterback, you got to be ready to be bold, I think, is the lesson I learned from that. You got to be ready to take a chance if you're in the market for a quarterback. You got to be ready to put a lot on the table, push all the chips in.
Put on the big boy pants.
Exactly. It's going to be fun next week. We're going to talk more about this. We'll get you involved as well. 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
With more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're a week away from the draft, and we're not tired of talking about it yet. I'm a little surprised. I actually, about 2 weeks ago, Chris, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep talking about the draft, the quarterbacks. Now it's a week away, and it's like every day, it seems, there's a different little twist, a different little thing to think about. I find that to be the case.
I think it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I do too.
I think there's so much potential for jockeying for position at the top of the board. I think it's going to be like a Wall Street sell-off. It's just guys are just going to be, I think it's got the potential to be bananas.
Yeah.
Where people are sitting in their chair, you know, watching this thing on TV or listening to you on the radio and going, whoa, you know,
right?
Like multiple woes.
I hope so. I hope that's the way it goes. It is a week from today, 8 p.m. We're going to be on the air on the radio side. We'll be on the simulcast side, obviously, during the day on Thursday, a week from today, noon to 3 p.m. And then at 8 p.m. next Thursday, we'll be on the radio on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, myself and Steve Tasker. And then the following day, we'll be on the radio for 5 hours, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., a simulcast for 5 hours, and you'll probably be part of that.
I'll be part of that, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully
we'll be there for a little bit.
First round pick will be in by then, you would think, and be setting it up for the second round, the Friday night, second and third round. It's all coming up next week, the draft, as is our new show, One Bills Live. In the meantime, what do you think? Who is in position to maybe screw up Buffalo's draft plans, quarterback draft plans next week? What other team? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-552-550. Call on the line from Larry in Lockport. Larry, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Well, good afternoon, John.
Hi.
I've been kind of laid up, so I've been watching your show pretty much the past week or so.
Oh, thanks, Larry. I hope you feel better. Thank you.
Yep, I am. You know, I don't think from the draft picks you've shown up there on the screen that there is anybody in a better position than Buffalo to move up if they want to. And, you know, even if the Patriots move up, you know, next year they're going to have a bottom end of the draft pick. And some of the others are also. I don't see anybody other than the Bills able to move up.
Well, I think the great equalizer, Larry, and I would tend to agree with you in terms of this year's draft capital, the great equalizer for some of these teams, if they are desperate enough to get up there, is future draft choices. And I know what you're saying, too, Larry, that the anticipation is that if, let's say, hypothetically, the Patriots are willing to part with a 1 in 2019 or a 2 in 2019, you're under the assumption, and probably a lot of other people would be too, that that's going to be a pick that's lower in the round. It wouldn't be as attractive. I can't dismiss that. But once you start talking about future ones, future twos, just going by the history of the deals we just ran through, it gets the job done. It really does.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can just completely dismiss that. That is the great equalizer for teams at the bottom of the board, offering future ones, future twos. So teams that maybe have a lot of draft capital already in this year's draft, you know, whether you deem it to be the Broncos, for example, at 5. We haven't talked about them yet. That's a team that could screw up Buffalo's draft plans. Who's to say that Denver doesn't decide to go from 5 to 2?
Yeah.
I mean, they can still offer the Giants a top 5 choice to get up to 2 and get the quarterback that they want. If the guy that the Browns take at 1 isn't the guy that Denver had at the top of their board. What's to say they don't go from 5 to 2? They've got 2 threes, 2 fours, and 2 fives. I mean, the Broncos have a lot of draft capital, and they're sitting at 5, comfortably ahead of the Bills, with a lot more to offer a team in return that sits in the top 4 than anything the Bills could give them at 12. So, you know, Denver is a team that could completely ruin the party, too. They don't even have to leapfrog the Bills. They're not drafting from a position behind the Bills. They're already up there, and they've got a lot of draft capital.
I think the conventional thinking around the league, though, is that Denver is not really interested in a quarterback.
Because
right?
of Case Keenum.
Yeah, and they've drafted quarterbacks with not much success in recent years, and that they, you know, Elway doesn't see anything he likes here.
Right, but I go back to what Elway said at the Combine that I mentioned on the show yesterday. He was asked point blank. And this is before they even acquired Case Keenum when he was asked this question. They asked him, aren't you hurt by all the misses over the years? Because they've got Tim Tebow, Paxton Lynch, and I still forgot to look up the third guy that they missed on. There was a third guy in there that was a first-round pick, and I'm not going to remember who the heck it was, and it's going to really bother me.
I'll look it up for you.
And they asked him, how do you feel about those misses? And he goes, can't worry about the misses. Got to keep firing. And I'm like, boy, there's a gunslinger of a quarterback there. He doesn't care about three misses on quarterbacks in the first round of the draft. And there he is.
Helps to be John Elway in Denver to have that kind of job security.
Right? He's like the John Wayne up there, isn't
exactly.
he? So, you know, he didn't care about the misses. He's going to keep swinging. I think he knows there is a margin of error that you just have to accept as part of the equation. Because the position that is missed on more than any other in round one over the history of the draft is quarterback. Well, why is that? Because more people make quarterback picks than probably any other position in round one. So the miss rate is going to be high because the total pool rate is high. Is it higher than any other position? That's some research that I'd like to see out there. Do people miss on other positions just as much, if not more, than quarterback? I don't know. And I certainly know this week or next week, I don't have the time to get the answer on that. You know, maybe someone that has time to crunch the numbers can do that. You got a lot of accountants out there that are scot-free now that we've passed
exactly.
tax day. Maybe
tax
we can call
gone.
One of them up and have them do the numbers on that. But, you know, I think Denver is a bona fide concern. If Cleveland at one doesn't take the guy who's at the top of Denver's board, you know, they can move up from 5 to 2 quite easily. And the reason that's appealing to the Giants is, Jay Cutler.
Yeah,
Jay
did
Cutler.
You want to go back that far? 06. Yeah.
That was the other guy I was thinking of. So they got Jay Cutler, Tim Tebow, Paxton Lynch. First-round picks. I mean, was Cutler a miss? He was a good quarterback. He was an attitude problem.
Played for 11 or 12 years. So
and got traded 2 times.
A couple times.
So, yeah. But those were the three misses that I was referring to with the Broncos. Somebody referenced those and posed the question to John Elway. But I think there's a genuine chance that Denver could – say, well, you know, Case Keenum's a nice quarterback, but how long is he playing here? 2 years? And then we got to find somebody. And I'm not convinced that, you know, Paxton Lynch or whoever else they have on their roster, Osweiler's still there, Chad Kelly, you know, I think he could be easily convinced that he's got to go find another one or believes that one on their roster now is not as good as what they could get at pick 2 in this year's draft.
Draft is a week away. We've been talking about it for a couple of months. And over that couple of months, all kinds of narratives develop. You know, Lamar Jackson would rather run than throw it. Saquon Barkley is a future Hall of Famer. Well, our buddy Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus wants to poke holes in some of those draft narratives. He's going to join us next with his NFL Draft Narrative Busters. Steve Palazzolo, NFL Draft College Football Analyst for ProFootballFocus.com. Coming up next on the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Update comes to you from One Bills Drive, where the Bills have wrapped up their first week of off-season conditioning, the voluntary program that began on Monday. 4 days this week, 4 days next week, all of it voluntary, just conditioning work in these first couple of weeks, phase one of the program, conditioning work and some rehab as well. If you listened to the show earlier, you heard Kelvin Benjamin talk about that, his rehab from his knee injury last year. Off-season conditioning over for this week. They'll be back at it again next week. Tonight, 8 o'clock, the NFL schedule comes out. The Buffalo Bills schedule comes out. We already know who they're playing and where those games will be, but tonight at 8 o'clock, we determine what time, what days, where the bye week is, primetime games, etc. The Bills schedule comes out at 8 o'clock tonight. You can get details on our website, buffalobills.com. Meantime, the NFL has already announced a couple of changes to the scheduling, including earlier start times for some primetime games on Monday, Thursdays, and Sunday nights. Monday Night Football will move up from 8:30 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Thursday night football will move up 5 minutes from 8:25 p.m. to 8:20. Sunday night football moves up 10 minutes from 8:30 p.m. to 8:20 p.m. Again, the regular season schedule comes out tonight at 8 o'clock. The league announced dates and times for the London games today. They'll have Seattle play Oakland at Tottenham Stadium October 14th at 1 o'clock Eastern. The following week, October 21, it's Tennessee and the Chargers at Wembley Stadium. That's a 9:30 a.m. kickoff. The following week after that, October 28th, back at Wembley, the Eagles and the Jaguars. That also a 9:30 a.m. kickoff. And the Monday night football game from Mexico City is set. It'll be the Rams hosting the Kansas City Chiefs in Mexico City at on November 19th. Kickoff for that game set on Monday night, 8:15 p.m. Eastern time. A new trend around the league. Fred Jackson did it here yesterday, coming up next Monday in Chicago. A couple of all-time greats, former Bears Matt Forte and Devin Hester, will both sign a one-day ceremonial contract and retire as members of the Chicago Bears. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Chris Brown joins us here today. Steve Tasker in to do the show tomorrow. A week away from the draft. We're looking for clarity on the draft. We're looking for sober-headed clarity. People who have a good feel for what's
sober-headed,
a good feel for what's going on around the league. We're not looking for hype. We're not looking for craziness. And so we went to one of our favorite guests. He's on the line with us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. A senior analyst at Pro Football Focus, NFL Draft and College Football Analyst, host of the PFF podcast. Happy to have Steve Palazzolo on the line with us. Steve, John Murphy, and Chris Brown here in Buffalo. We need sober-headed analysis from you today. We need clear thinking. We don't need draft hype. You're just the guy for that, aren't you? You're that guy.
I am sober, John. I'm ready. I'm going to keep it nice and clear for you guys. Haven't had a drink in a while. It's draft season.
I'm not talking about drinking. I'm just, you know how it gets this time of year. There's crazy. All of a sudden, one of the sports this week, it became a kind of a pastime for people to put together plans for three-team trades before the draft, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Who can forecast that? Who can predict how that might work out?
Yeah, I love the build-up for the draft, and then there's just a point where it's like, all right, let's do it. Browns, make your pick. Let's get this thing done and start talking about what's actually happened and what the picks actually were. So I'm about ready for it.
I am ready as well, and we were ready to read your most recent post, NFL Draft Narrative Busters. You know, in the run-up to the draft, as you point out, there's just a lot of information, a lot of evaluation. Some of it's just baloney. You point out some of the biggest narratives that don't really matter anymore. In fact, Baker Mayfield had plenty of easy throws in the Oklahoma offense. You say that's true. What did you see from Baker Mayfield looking at his Oklahoma video?
Yeah, look, Baker Mayfield's our top-graded quarterback. We love him. We think he does so many things well. But one of the knocks that people have used against him was that the Oklahoma offense was, you know, made things easy for him, and he threw a ton of screens, and they worked this RPO game, and the Big 12 defenses are terrible, and all that stuff's true. So, you know, he did have a lot of easy throws. He did throw 20% of his attempts that were actually screens, and he had the highest percentage of open throws in our charting in the entire class. So all that stuff was true. The problem is just when you start to use that as a knock against him, because he was also really good at the stuff that matters, which is the tight window throws, and he actually hit those open throws better than anybody in the class, so he's the most accurate in the class. So it's one of those narratives that's true but probably shouldn't be used as a knock against Baker Mayfield, because if you're looking for the NFL-type stuff on film, it's in there as well.
Yeah, the tight window throws I found very interesting, because as we all know, the windows are tighter when these guys get to the NFL because the coverage is better. And it was Mayfield and Rosen kind of leading the pack, although Mayfield was kind of alone by himself there, like a full 10 percentage points, I guess, based on your guys' metrics ahead of even Rosen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, when things got tough, Mayfield was great. And this was 2 years running. We have 2 years of data on this for Mayfield. This is our super advanced QB charting that we've just started. We put it all in our PFF draft guide if you guys want to see all the numbers. But Mayfield on tight window throws, and we're talking down the field, throwing post routes where guys have only a, you know, half a step of separation. We're talking, you know, he had red zone throws against TCU where he was throwing the ball up and away from coverage. Essentially only where his receiver could get it. He was throwing the ball around four defenders, putting it only where his receiver could get it. So we saw this rather consistently. He's got this really good feel for leading guys through zones and also throwing, you know, back shoulders and all these passes up and away from coverage where only his receiver can get it. So there weren't a ton of these throws on film, but when he did make them, or he did attempt them, he made them as well as anybody in the class.
Hey, Steve, another quarterback to ask you about who also I think is somewhat polarizing in terms of people looking at his college career, Lamar Jackson, the former Heisman Trophy winner from Louisville. The perception, the narrative is he doesn't work through progressions. He just runs around and scrambles. You found that not to be the case at all on Lamar Jackson, huh?
No, not at all. And, again, this is all from our new advanced quarterback charting. And we said, look, let's try to actually identify, is the quarterback starting on one side of the field, working through his reads? We charted it for 10 of the draft-eligible quarterbacks, the top guys in the class. And he had the second highest percentage of times that he actually worked to his second or third read in the progression. And when he did it, he was actually really accurate. And, not a lot of people are talking about that. They think because he's a great athlete, because he had so many rushing yards, which he did, that he just runs around, you know, drops back, doesn't really want to see the field, and he just wants to run. And it's really the opposite. 73% of his rushing yards actually came from just designed runs. So, you know, option-type looks where he's just keeping it. And, so he was a part of the designed running game. Only 27% of his rushing yards came from those scrambles. So he's not scrambling to run. And when he actually is in the pocket, he is coming off his first read and trying to get to a second or third read. And when he does it, he's really accurate. So, you know, if somebody's telling you that he's just running around trying to make plays, it's a part of his game, but certainly not the main part of his game.
That was the number, though, that surprised me the most, Steve. The fact that it is 73% of the time, it's by design with his run game. And I wonder how that inhibits, let's just say, an NFL draft evaluator from projecting his game to the NFL, because that is such a big percentage, and there's no way, even if a team is ready to adopt and shape an offense around Lamar Jackson, that they're going to run him that much, especially with his slight frame. So how much do you think that compromises the accuracy of a projection to the NFL, knowing the design run game was that large a percentage, you know, at Louisville?
No, it's a great point. I mean, it does hurt. It does hurt the projection. It does make it difficult. I think if you're looking at taking advantage of Lamar's skill set, you do have to try to run him, though. You do have to try to run him 6, 8, 10 times a game, or at least the threat of him running, because when he did that at Louisville, what it did is it does move the defenders. It does have to throw a few more defenders in the box, and you work play action off that. You run the run pass option game off of that. And just like Baker Mayfield had a ton of open throws, Lamar had a ton of open throws too, but I think a lot of it was not because he was playing bad defenses, but it was because the run threat opens things up. So I do think there's this fine line of the NFL tapping into that athleticism, letting him make those special plays with his legs, and also creating those easier throws, because he's really not the most accurate quarterback. He's going to miss a lot of throws. He's going to, you know, instead of leading a guy, leave it a little bit too far behind. But if you make those throws open, you can at least complete them, and you can have a productive guy. So yeah, it's going to be a challenge for an NFL offensive coordinator to build around his skill set. But I think there's a path to do that.
On the line with Steve Palazzolo, senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com, their draft and college football analyst as well. All right, another polarizing quarterback, Josh Allen, Wyoming. I got to tell you, Steve, our listeners, people who participate in our show, there's more negativity about Josh Allen, and I think it all centers around the 57% completion percentage, but you found out that that narrative about him being inaccurate is real. In fact, you write that poor decisions, inaccurate passes litter his tape. What did you see from Josh Allen?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the negativity just, it comes from that completion percentage number, which does show up on tape. He just misses far too many throws. And look, he jumped up on our radar in 2016 when he was surrounded by some NFL caliber players, Tanner Gentry and Jacob Hollister, Brian Hill, Chase Roullier. They had a bunch of guys that are on NFL rosters and practice squads, and that's pretty good for the Mountain West. And he did have an excellent 2016 season, but even then, he still ranked 101st out of 133 qualifiers in our adjusted completion percentage number, which essentially says if your guy drops it, we're giving you credit. We're going to call that accurate. So 101st in the nation, even with all that NFL talent, he ranked 22nd in what we call turnover-worthy throws. Those are those passes where you're, you know, misreading a linebacker, throwing it right to him, and those passes that should be intercepted. So he has bad decisions. He's going to miss a lot of throws. He'll absolutely make spectacular plays that make you say, wow, and I think that's why the NFL loves him, between the 6'5 and the cannon for an arm and the athleticism. in the special throws, but you're talking down for down accuracy. Even in Josh Allen's best season, which was 2016, he wasn't this clean top 10 type of prospect. And then 2017 happens. A lot of his skill set, you know, a lot of his skill players move on to the NFL. The numbers got that much worse. And we hear this narrative that it's all about his supporting cast, which was terrible. But to be honest, not much has changed with him as a player in 2016 or 17. You know, he still has plenty of question marks heading into the draft.
Perhaps the boldest statement you made in this piece, Steve, was that Saquon Barkley is not a generational running back. I'm going to just play devil's advocate here with your contention. And the angle I'm going to take here is Barkley's skill set as a receiver out of the backfield. Could you argue that that trumps your criticism here in the piece, which is he doesn't maximize the yardage based on the run blocking he received at Penn State, and that's why you're kind of downgrading him in whatever capacity you have here? You look at what the kid that came, Christian McCaffrey, last year, a top 10 pick, due mainly to the mismatch that he is in the pass game. I think Barkley is certainly not the same body type, but I think he offers similar mismatch ability. So what do you say to the devil's advocate argument that his mismatch in the passing game may lift him into generational back status?
Yeah, if you're going to argue with my point, you're doing it the right way. You're making the right point, because, look, nobody's going to trash the running game in general more than me. You know, there's nothing more overrated than establishing the run and, focusing on run blocking and run defense, and that's just, I think it's antiquated in the NFL. So you're making the right point. He is an awesome receiver. I mean, he is the guy that can line up out wide, line up in the slot, create mismatches. To maximize his value, though, I think you have to use him a lot like the Saints used Alvin Kamara, who had, 80-plus catches last year and lined up all over the place. I mean, that is the way to maximize his value. I think when we talk generational running back, though, I think the thing that gives me pause is I think there are other guys that are similar who have come into the league in recent years, whether it's Zeke Elliott, whether it's Le'Veon Bell a few years ago, or even Alvin Kamara last year. You know, if Barkley's going to duplicate what Kamara did, then we've seen it for two straight years, and Kamara was unbelievable last year. So even Todd Gurley, I think Todd Gurley's a guy that probably compares favorably to Barkley, and Gurley's this near MVP candidate last year because of what he did in the pass game. But we've also seen a couple seasons from Gurley where his poor vision running the football made him a really ineffective runner. So for Barkley to just be that perfect all-around player, and we've heard people say that he's got a perfect grade, and that's, to me, that's the part that's ridiculous, because there are too many plays on tape where he's kind of running away from contact, not maximizing what's there. So he's just not this perfect prospect, but you're making the right argument. It's all about the pass game in today's NFL.
If Barkley is not the perfect prospect, if he's not a generational running back, is guard Quentin Nelson the perfect prospect at guard? What do you see from him?
Yes, I think he is. He's awesome. So he's the best guard we've seen in our short time at PFF College, grading every single snap. Really did first catch my eye when he was a redshirt freshman in 2015. He was outstanding that year. Last 2 years, put up 90-plus overall grades, which are those are elite grades in our 0 to 100 grading system. The second-best guard grade we've ever seen, just a fraction of a point behind Will Hernandez from UTEP, who did that in 2016. So 95.1 was Nelson's grade last year. So he just does everything well. He run blocks, he pass blocks, he run blocks. Big guys at the point of attack, linebackers at the second level, really like Nelson and everything he brings to the table.
Hey, I got to tell you, Chris and I today, Steve, have talked a lot about the cost for the Bills moving up and maybe who jumps over the Bills to move up in the draft to get one of those premium quarterbacks. If you were advising a team like the Bills or any one of these other quarterback-needy teams, is this quarterback class worthy of, the cost it might take to move up there into the top six picks in order to get one of these premium passers? What do you think?
So I really think it depends on what happens at the top. In my world, I'm looking at three teams at the top, in the Browns, the Giants, and the Jets, who all need quarterbacks. And I know the Giants are talking about maybe getting Barkley and running with Eli as their starter. But in my world, those three teams must take quarterbacks. And I feel much more comfortable about the top three quarterbacks in this draft than I do the next three. So my top three, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, If you could go get one of those guys, I'd feel much better about that. But I do think if the Bills could only get to number four, then you start to roll the dice a little bit, because then you're talking about, in my world, again, the next tier of quarterbacks. I think the reality is if the Browns take Josh Allen, then I think it's probably worth the Bills to go up to number four and get the remains of Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, or Josh Rosen. To me, that would be worth it. So the reality is, I think it depends on what happens at the top of the draft, and if Josh Allen, who I just think is, you know, could become good, but it's just a bigger roll of the dice. If he gets taken in that top three, in my world, that would open things up for the Bills. I would go ahead and make that move.
And quarterback is a need. In fact, you've done a comprehensive review of all 32 teams and their needs going into the draft next week. Quarterback really at the top of the Bills' list, right, along with a couple of other positions?
Yeah, I mean, look, the roster's not great. We know that, but it certainly starts and ends with the quarterback position. So whatever wheeling and dealing they need to do, of course, they have the extra first-round pick to go ahead and do that. So quarterback, it's just a pure yes. But I think beyond that, it's, you know, whatever quarterback they have needs better playmakers because, you know, Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, still plenty of question marks with those guys out there. The offensive line can still use some help all up and down the board, and you know, a couple spots on defense, whether it's edge rusher or linebacker. So I think they have plenty of needs, and obviously it all starts with quarterback and getting that solidified first.
Steve, Chris and I have been talking about how much we're looking forward to next week's draft, and I wonder, I know a lot of fans feel that way. What's coming up on ProFootballFocus.com that fans will be able to use, a valuable tool that's either there now or will be there between now and next Thursday night at 8?
Yeah, so it's going to be all about our PFF Edge and Elite products, because it's not just draft. When you sign up for Edge, you get our draft guide. You get our QB annual, which breaks down quarterbacks in ways that nobody ever has before. You get some fantasy tools. You get player grades, and it's all just 365 days of access. So you sign up for Edge or Elite, and you get our draft guide, which will get you ready for the draft, but also all these other fun tools, and you get a whole year's access of it. So I think that's everything all the fans need leading up to the draft and beyond.
Yeah, it's a great resource. We thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us here today, Steve. Good luck at the draft. Hope you have fun with it.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Steve Palazzolo is senior analyst for ProFootballFocus.com, PFF. He is a draft and college football analyst, host of the PFF podcast. We thank Steve for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. John Murphy, Chris Brown coming to you live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, as we await the draft a week away. We also await the release of the NFL schedule coming out tonight at 8 o'clock officially. The Bills will make it available right around 8 o'clock on the website, buffalobills.com. But, Chris, there are leaks coming out. Have you seen some of these schedule leaks?
I have not seen the leaks.
The New York Jets schedule. Now, the New York Post has what they're calling the official jet schedule.
Oh, they got a mole somewhere.
Brian Costello wrote it. He's their beat reporter, I believe, right, for the New York Daily News?
Yes.
On the Jets schedule, and this is totally unofficial, not confirmed at all, but the Jets schedule has the Jets playing the Bills in Week 10, and that is in New York, Sunday, November 11th at 1 p.m. Then the Jets get the bye. And then 4 weeks later, the Jets coming here, according to the New York Daily News, on Sunday, December 9th, 1 p.m. at New Era Field. Do with that whatever you want. There's nothing exciting there, Chris.
Well, it's division matchups. We knew they were playing them twice. It's just a matter of when. And see, that's the thing. Like, for me, I think the only thing that intrigues me with NFL schedules is, you know, do the Bills have any primetime games? Are they home or away? You know, and then let's go from there. You know, that's the stuff that gets me charged up.
Yeah.
You know, and who the matchup is, and where's the bye week? These are the things that I kind of look for.
I do like the schedule when it comes out. I like having some certainty. I like when they get the calls, too, and people, we've been asking you all day, which team do you think might jump ahead of the Buffalo Bills and wreak havoc on the Bills' quarterback draft plans? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Tom on the line from Grand Island. Tom, what do you think?
Hey, guys. I think that we have the most capital that's, like, enticing the other teams, but the team that I'm really worried about, honestly, is Miami, because of you look at Ryan Tannehill. He's been average at best for them. And on top of that, he's had his ACL injury, so they could very well be looking for, you know, a new quarterback possibly. And I don't know. I think that this draft's going to be nuts. and I can't wait for it. But I really hope that we don't get pushed out of the running from one of these top guys. I really would like, personally, would really like Josh Rosen. But I don't know. Either way, I'll be excited for how the draft turns out. But that's the team I'm worrying about.
Yeah. You're in the same boat as Murph.
Yeah.
Murph's worried about the Dolphins. I mean, we said it last hour, too. You can make the argument that every team in the division is going to be gunning for a quarterback. You can make a case for the Dolphins, as you just did, because I think 100% the clock is ticking on Ryan Tannehill. He's 30 years old. He's coming off an ACL. He's had back-to-back subpar seasons at the quarterback position, despite having what is largely believed to be a strong offensive mind and head coach Adam Gase. It hasn't come together for him. And they've invested in their offensive line, too, in recent years to help support the quarterback. They've invested heavily in the wide receiver position in the draft to help the quarterback, and none of it has proven fruitful. So the clock is absolutely ticking on Ryan Tannehill, and it wouldn't shock me in the least if the Dolphins drafted a quarterback. I think everybody's of the belief the Jets moved up to number 3 with the express purpose of drafting a quarterback. They're lock, stock, and barrel, as I see it, after drafting at that position several times in the last few years. And then New England, you know, I know Tom Brady looks like the fountain of youth, but what's he got? 1-2 more years tops? They've got to start grooming a successor there. So, and they have draft capital too with 2 1s and 2 2s. So you can make the argument that every team in this division could be gunning for one of the quarterback prospects. It makes for a very, it's a treacherous round one here. It's filled with pitfalls.
Here's a call from Colin. Colin on the line with us. Go ahead, Colin.
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You guys do a good job. I wanted to say that first.
Thank you,
Colin.
We're gonna miss Donald.
Okay.
But I did want to weigh in on this quarterback thing. Listen, I think that the Bills have already did a good job bringing in A.J. McCarron.
You like him?
Yeah, I do. I like A.J. McCarron. I like what he did in Alabama. I know he sat behind the big redhead in Cincinnati. But I do think that he has some things that he can show the NFL in Buffalo.
Okay. We'll see. Thanks for your call. We're going to take a break. We're back with more in a moment. I'm sorry. What did you say? I'm sorry, Colin. What do you have to say?
Colin is spelled with 2 L's.
Oh, my bad. Colin is spelled with 2 L's.
Let's get that up on the board there.
Thanks, Colin. 2 L's. We got a break here. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown. As we speak today, Giants GM Dave Gettleman holding a news conference, his pre-draft news conference. A couple of interesting things about the draft, Chris, that got my attention. First of all, Gettleman told the media in New York, the devaluing of running backs is a myth. All right, but hold on here for a second. There's another interesting question. To those who say Gettleman and the Giants have to take a quarterback because his current quarterback is 37 years old and he has a number 2 pick, Dave Gettleman said, hogwash. Which is a great way to phrase it.
Hogwash. That's how he said it,
yeah.
Too.
What we're getting at here is that he's not going to be locked into taking a quarterback there in the draft. Dave Gettleman at number 2. And I'm sure he wants to keep his options open to entertain trade possibilities.
Sure.
What do you think?
No,
I think it's great.
Yeah, I think why wouldn't you at least listen? You're really in the catbird seat there at 2. So I'd be inclined to do whatever I had to put my team in the best position possible. And, you know, the Giants – nobody's talking about the Giants draft capital. Sure, they sit in the catbird seat at pick number 2, but they only have 6 total picks in this draft. They don't have a lot to work with. And so I think if you give him enough, he could be inclined to move out of there. The problem for Gettleman, I think, is how far down he wants to move. That's why I think a team like Denver, if they're dead set on getting one of the top quarterback prospects and they want to go from 5 to 2, I think Dave Gettleman's listening. Because at 5, he knows he's probably going to get one of the 2 best non-quarterback prospects in this draft. He's probably either getting Bradley Chubb or Saquon Barkley at 5. Because the Browns presumably will take one of those at 4 if they stay there. The Jets are taking a quarterback. The Browns are taking a quarterback. So Denver moves up to 2, takes a quarterback. So now it's quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. You know, even sitting at 5, if you're Dave Gettleman, you move back to the 5th spot, you're getting Bradley Chubb or Saquon Barkley. You're still happy and you've added draft assets. So I think he could be convinced to slide back there, potentially even back to 6 where the Colts sit. But the Colts are not moving up. They're looking to move down, if anywhere. So I think Gettleman's smart to say I'm open for business, because I think if Denver calls, that's probably the most likely team he would deal with because he doesn't have to move back much.
Hey, the schedule comes out tonight, 8 o'clock officially. There are some, we told you the Jets schedule, the full schedule leaked. We haven't seen a Bills schedule yet. Don't anticipate we will see the official schedule till 8. We're aware of all kinds of rumors out there, and I think we'll just sit tight on that. I don't want to put any misinformation out there about this schedule.
That's right. You know, there. I mean, it was funny because I want to say 3 years ago there were a ton of leaks.
Yeah.
And then the 2 years after that, there were almost no leaks. And I wonder if we're getting back to leak time, because it's like 2 years go by, nothing gets leaked, and now people get a little looser with the information they have at their disposal, and all of a sudden stuff's in the Daily News in New York and who knows where else.
Yeah.
We do know the London games.
Right.
And the Mexico City game, that's Kansas City and – who was the Mexico City?
Rams, right? Or Chargers?
Kansas City and the Rams.
Rams, okay.
Chargers are going to London to play the Titans. That's October 21st. So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm most interested to know, will the Bills get a primetime game? That's not Thursday night. That would be nice. You know, these Thursday night games, I don't like them. I really think they water down the product. It's not enough turnaround time for the players. So the two most important things I want to know, do the Bills get a primetime game, which would be great if they could get it at home. We haven't had a home primetime game in a while that's not on a Thursday. And when's their bye? Those are the two most important things I want to know. And hopefully the bye is somewhere in the midseason range.
We'll know by 8 o'clock tonight. It'll be up on our website at 8. Let's take a few phone calls. Here is John in Florida. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I listen to you guys every single day. It's my injection for the non-football season. So thank you for that.
Sure.
my thought is McCarron. I know you guys think that we need a quarterback so bad, but I honestly believe that McCarron is the answer to a consistent, controlling ability football quarterback that we need. I'm not saying he's a star, but I don't believe that we can promise that any of them in the draft are a star either. So a lot of the times when you see the great quarterbacks, they're fourth and fifth rounders, and I think history proves that. So grabbing a first rounder because he was good at UCLA or USC or Texas or whatever, that these guys are going to – you guys probably agree. There's no guarantee on them.
No.
And I think McCarron's got the same ability, and his head's screwed on straight. We know what we're getting with his mental attitude, his team attitude, his leader attitude, and he does have the arm. He's not going to throw it 75 yards, and like he said the other day, you don't have to. So I'm believing that we don't need a quarterback. I hope they don't even draft one in the first couple of rounds. Mm. We stick with McCarron and Peterman and get all the other tools that we need. Thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks, John. I disagree, respectfully. I mean, how can you say they don't need a quarterback?
That is a minority opinion of the highest order in Bills Nation.
I get if you don't want to pay a steep price to move up. I get that. I get it. Why be
reluctant? Can't be gun shy.
No. Of course they need a quarterback. Of course they do. They need a franchise quarterback. There's a reason why A.J. McCarron was a fifth-round pick, and there's a reason why he was a backup in Cincinnati. I mean, it's just – it's truth. It's real. Here's a call from Tom in Lackawanna. Go ahead, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Yes, guys. I heard you talking earlier about Laletta and Falk. I just wondered where you think White belongs in what round and what you think of him.
What do you think? Yeah. Fourth round, Chris? Third, fourth
I
round?
Like Mike White, the Western Kentucky kid. He was at the Senior Bowl also. Kid's got a live arm. He does have a strong arm, threw for a ton of yardage. in that open offense at Western Kentucky. I put him in the top 100. I think he's probably, I would say he's probably late day two, maybe bottom around three. But if he gets to day three, I think he's off the board very quickly at the top of round four.
Call here from Dave in Tonawanda. Hello, Dave. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Hey, I have a comment, a question, and a favor to ask.
Okay.
My comment is, I think the Browns, by taking two quarterbacks at 1 and 4, can wreak havoc throughout the draft, which affects us. My question is, Roto-World reported this morning that they're considering taking two quarterbacks. Hmm. And are they doing that to raise the value of those picks? And also, if Steve could send me one of those Pro Football Focus guides, I'd appreciate it.
Well, you can go to their website, profootballfocus.com, and find what you need there. That'd probably be the best way to do it, Dave. How does it benefit the Browns to take two quarterbacks at one and another one, or quarterback at one, another one at four? Is that really the best thing for Cleveland Browns?
I'm just going to say this for the Browns. Don't get cute. Don't get cute. Just, I mean, two quarterbacks. I understand the premise because the Browns have missed on quarterbacks so much in recent years, whether it's DeShone Kizer or Johnny Manziel or, you know, insert name here since Tim Couch in 99. For me, you've got an opportunity to get the quarterback that you want at one and one of the two best non-quarterback talents in this draft. Don't get cute. Unless you are blown away by an offer for your pick at four. One's off the table. Take your guy and be done with it. And unless you're blown away and can get future draft capital in round one in 2019 or round one in 2020, if I'm the Browns, I sit there at four and take my best non-quarterback on the board at four. And now I know full well, where's my draft capital sheet? I know full well that I've got three picks in round two to really make some hay here. So if I even want to get back up into the bottom of round one for some prospect that's sliding that I didn't think was going to get to 25, I've got three twos to get up there. And I could arguably get three players in round one along with all the young talent that I've, you know, acquired over the last couple of drafts. And, oh, by the way, I've got Jarvis Landry, Tyrod Taylor. I've got Carlos Hyde. I mean, my offense is looking pretty good. I've got talent on defense. Get me a nice corner at 25, and I'm feeling pretty darn good if I'm John Dorsey. I'm smoking a cigar at the end of night one of the draft.
Hey, let's play a little NFL True and False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. This came out this week, the Houston Texans and their offseason conditioning program. And interesting stuff, Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins told reporters Tuesday, I expect us, Hopkins and Watson, to be the best duo in the NFL. He said, that's my goal. I'm pretty sure that's his goal. We all have these goals for ourselves that will help us do what we want to do. Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, the best duo in the NFL, will become the best duo in the NFL. I'm going false. There's a chance it could happen, but I would bet against it.
Who do you like better?
I have to think about that. I think, you know, Pittsburgh already has a better group. You know,
yeah, Roethlisberger and Brown. And Brown, yeah. I would give you that. I think these two, it's probably still a little early for Watson.
That's what I'm thinking.
What he was doing before he got hurt, man, he was killing it. I mean, he had four out of five games where he threw four touchdown passes or more, and the game that he didn't, he threw three. He had 19 touchdowns in like five games. It was insane. And I think DeAndre Hopkins could eclipse Antonio Brown as the best receiver in the league. So I'm going to go and say true. I'm going to project and say true that they are the best and will be in 2018. You got to believe that the Roethlisberger-Brown thing, while it's going to be extraordinarily productive again, it's hard to stay at the top very long in the NFL in anything. So I'll go Watson and Hopkins on projection as the best. I was trying to think of other combos. I was thinking Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. When you think about it, though, Murph, there aren't a ton out there. It's Roethlisberger, Brown. I would say Cooper and Carr. Hopkins and Watson. There aren't many.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, Dalton and A.J. Green is nice, but I wouldn't put it up at the top.
No.
That's a tough one. There aren't a lot. The quarterbacks in Denver do not give you that combination with Demaryius Thomas anymore. Drew Brees really doesn't have it in New Orleans anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good duo to pick if you're placing racing odds there.
Now I'm looking at it again and will become the best duo. I'll still say false, but I see no, but I see the point.
He's hedging.
It's not like they're not the best. I don't think they're the best now, nor do I think they'll be the best this season. But down the road, that could happen.
Yeah.
NFL true or false? James Harrison, recently retired, belongs in the Hall of Fame. You get to go first on this one, Chris.
That's a false all the way.
Really?
Yeah. I know he had a long career, but if you look at his career numbers, he really only had about a 4-year stretch where he was dominant in this league. And I know he's got the Super Bowl MVP at the 102-yard interception return, which was a fabulous play and probably one of the 10 best plays in Super Bowl history. And he's got two rings. But if you look at his career, he's only got 84.5 career sacks. And that's what he was known for. That's not enough for me.
More than Cortez Kennedy, more than Howie Long, both in the Hall of Fame?
Those were defensive tackles, though.
Right.
Well, Long was a defensive end.
On the outside.
But, yeah, Kennedy was a defensive tackle and a guy that did more than just get after the passer. This guy, was he an overachiever? Absolutely. I mean, the guy did more than anybody thought he would. He lasted longer than anybody thought he would. He's in my Hall of Very Good. He's not in my Hall of Fame. I say false.
I'll put it true, and I would put him in the Hall of Fame. Whether he belongs in there or not, I think he'll be in there. 5 Pro Bowl performances, 4 All-Pro teams.
We got enough Steelers.
Defensive Player of the Year Award. The Super Bowl play you talked about, 84.5 sacks is nothing to dismiss. That's a lot of sacks. Yeah, I think James Harrison is a Hall of Famer. I'm going true on that one. And finally, Kurt Warner is the best fit for Monday Night Football.
Do we have other candidates?
True or false? I think he's the leading candidate. He's a leader in the clubhouse.
Who are the other guys that interviewed?
I forget. I read some of them.
I've seen Warner on NFL Network. I kind of like his analysis. Quarterbacks are always a natural fit because, you know, they can most effectively read everything that's going on down there. And that's why we often see them in the booth after their careers are over. I don't know if he's controversial enough, though. I think he's too much of a nice guy.
Other names mentioned, Carson Palmer, Joe Thomas,
yeesh.
Matt Hasselbeck,
no.
Louis Riddick. Randy Moss.
Not the right fit. No.
Joe Tessitore expected to be the new play-by-play guy replacing Sean McDonough.
I guess I'll have to say true after you give me that litany.
Peyton Manning, I think they offered him the job. He turned it down. And, yeah, I think I'm going true with this. I think he is the best
Every time I mention Randy Moss, because my son missed the majority of his career because he's too young, the only way he knows Randy Moss is from his antics on the
Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Countdown. Yeah. So every time I say Randy Moss in the house, the first thing out of my son's mouth is, straight cash, homie, because that's his big catchphrase. That's what I hear. Not like, you know, he's a freak that runs by people right. and this and that. That's
he's
what
a TV
I get.
Starter.
Straight cash, homie. Yeah, that's what we get. From. That's what Randy Moss means to millennials now.
True, false, Kurt Warner, best fit?
I'm going to have to say true based on that list of candidates he gave me. He's the best of the bunch there. So I'll go with true and – you know, hope he gets a little more edge to him. I think Kurt's too much of a nice guy. I want to see, you know, that's what turned me off to John Gruden as an analyst. This guy's great. Oh, he's unbelievable. You know, it's like Jimmy Fallon on his nighttime show. Oh, this guy's the best. Our guest tonight on the show, he's unbelievable. He's the best. Oh, I love him. He does fantastic work. The best in the business. It's like everybody's the best in the business. I mean, can somebody just be mediocre for once? Can we criticize somebody and say, you know, they're not getting the job done? I mean, come on.
Yeah, Monday Night Football.
There's got to be some edge there. There's no edge to Monday Night Football.
It's been tough to watch for a couple of
years. You know, Howard Cosell, for all his critics, I give him credit for calling somebody out when they didn't get the job done.
Yeah.
I mean, he may have been bombastic and sometimes filled with some hyperbole, but you take the good with the bad, and, you know, I'd rather have a guy with edge in that booth. Make the broadcast more exciting.
NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York Artisan Cheese. One more matter of business just shortly before we get to the break. Among other things, Dave Gettleman said today, he announced that they have released Brandon Marshall. That was not unexpected. Mm-hmm. A tweet here from Steve DeLucia. Should the Bills take a look at Brandon Marshall? Anything left in the tank? I think not. I don't think they're going to be interested in him, but they do need receivers. I just don't see that happening.
I think they have the big target already, and that's Kelvin Benjamin, who is a much younger option also. I think Marshall is very much at the end. He hasn't been able to run for about four seasons now. And so, you know, now here we are several years later. You know, I don't even know if he's going to get picked up,
right,
quite frankly. I see him.
He could wind up on Monday Night Football. Seriously.
And there's a guy with – I would take him over Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
He's done pretty well in the times he's been on TV. And
yeah.
Hello to Steve, who I actually know. So
okay.
Thanks for watching and listening.
All right, we got a break here. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Kelvin Benjamin joined us with Chris Brown a little bit early on the show today after the final workout today for the first week of the off-season conditioning program. Kelvin Benjamin talked about preparing without really knowing yet who the starting quarterback is going to be for the Bills this year.
You got to just go about it. I mean, you know, like you said, you don't know. You know, you got to build that relationship with all the guys, you know, both of the guys for right now, AJ and Peterman. So, you know, just build that relationship with them because you don't know who's going to be the quarterback. But at the same time, you know, kind of watch them and see how they go about their business. You know what I'm saying? Because you want a quarterback that can lead, mm-hmm. and you want a quarterback that you're willing to follow. So that's what I'm looking for as my quarterback.
Kelvin Benjamin speaking to us on the show earlier today. Also today, earlier this hour, we talked with Steve Palazzolo, who is the reporter, the writer for ProFootballFocus.com. He's written a post that's up on the website right now on PFF.com, busting the narrative, some of the popular narratives about the upcoming draft, including the quarterbacks, including Baker Mayfield, the Oklahoma quarterback, who some people think he benefited from having easy throws to make. Palazzolo says that's true, but there's also very many good things about Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield's our top-graded quarterback. We love him. We think he does so many things well. But one of the knocks that people have used against him was that the Oklahoma offense was, you know, made things easy for him, and he threw a ton of screens, and they worked this RPO game, and the Big 12 defenses are terrible. And all that stuff was true. The problem is just when you start to use that as a knock against him, because he was also really good at the stuff that matters, which is the tight window throws. And he actually hit those open throws better than anybody in the class, so he's the most accurate in the class. So it's one of those narratives that's true but probably shouldn't be used as a knock against Baker Mayfield, because if you're looking for the NFL-type stuff on film, it's in there as well.
Steve Palazzolo from ProFootballFocus.com. The schedule comes out at 8 o'clock tonight. We put the question up actually a little bit yesterday, a little bit more today. Wanted to know which game are you looking forward to most. The NFL schedule comes out tonight at 8 o'clock. Which primetime matchup do you most want to see for the Buffalo Bills this year? John Ray tweets in, I want to host the Patriots late in the season or at Green Bay on Monday night. A couple of other responses to this. Scott Danks tweets in, the game I'm looking for is when the Bills come down to Houston. Obviously, he's a Bills fan down there in Houston. And we'll know in a couple of hours. Chris, what's coming up on the website when the schedule comes out at 8 o'clock?
Well, we'll kind of take a look at that schedule, digest it for everybody, and kind of give them the five most important things they need to know about the schedule. You know, last year, for example, one of the things that we wanted to draw attention was to the fact that they have like four division games in the last 5 weeks last year. That was a point of emphasis that we wanted to point out to the Bills fans. And we'll have some other, you know, items that we pull from the schedule. You know, maybe they've got three straight road games or something. That's an anomaly on an NFL schedule in most cases. There's only two or three teams in the league that usually have that. So there could be things like that that we try to point out, because most of the time, Bills fans in general are just looking at, well, what's a good road game for me to play on a road trip with friends? Or what game could we drive to? And when is it? And am I open that weekend? They're all making plans for tailgates and road trips and
right.
things like that, where we're trying to look at how it impacts the team and potentially their performance.
We talked about this, I think, the other day. We're down to a couple of seconds here. But for Sean McDermott and his staff, it's probably where's the bye week and do we have a Thursday night game? Those would be the two biggest considerations for a coach.
How do we have to adjust the schedule for the players based on when we're playing? And Thursday night disrupts that more than any other game for sure.
Chris, thanks for this. The last couple of days, we'll get you in here next week a lot, I'm sure, for the draft. We appreciate it. Thanks very much.
You got it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, George Blass, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Thomas Hollander, Jeff Koltnick, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at 12 noon, noon to 3. Steve Tasker's back tomorrow. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.